agenda before us today is to table the annual results of ESCOP. They are here before us, and the chairperson of ESCOP and the CEO are here, and DPE is also here. They will introduce their various delegations. Good morning and welcome, everybody. I'm Faith Kimenji, chairperson of the committee. I will move over quickly to the left.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Chris Hororo. I'm a member of this committee. I come from Mpumalanga. Thank you.
Victoria Bowman, member of this committee. I come from KwaZulu-Natal.
Good morning, Rose Soto, member of the committee. I come from the Mother City.
Good morning. My name is Victor van Dalen. I'm a member for the Committee for the Democratic Alliance, and I come from Cape Town.
Cape Town.
You're playing double standard. A week ago, you said
you must. Yes. Yes, you never answered me if you were going to allow it or not. You just left me in the limbo. If you had said you're not going to do it, then I would have respected that. But you never answered me.
Okay. My name is Aubrey Mugwena. I represent the Gauteng province.
Gerard Kurno, Gauteng.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
feel important. We feel honored when you bring a sizable delegation. It means to take us seriously, and you take your annual results seriously as well. Thank you very much. Members, there is just one thing that I would like to bring to attention. Is that how we correct? Okay, thank you. Any apologies before I raise my issue?
I've only received two apologies from Ms. Hajish, who is still sickness, and Mr. Kharim. And then Dr. Van Dijk is delayed. He's already be joining us in a few minutes. Okay.
Madam, just for clarity, this is a student from Bishops, and his surname is Van Heerden, and he was just joining us for about 20 minutes, and then he will be leaving again. He's like just coming to have a look. And
that student is supposed to be in class.
Yes, I know.
So?
And his work is today to be in Parliament. But maybe you can ask him yourself what class he does.
No, it's always a pleasure to have learners learning from the workplace, etc. But we should also strongly say you're supposed to be in class. I welcome you here. Just before I'll give you a chance to speak, we're happy to have you in our midst, but you will have to explain to me outside this meeting why you are not in class, but maybe you must tell this meeting why it was important for you to leave class and to be in our midst today. Don't feel attacked. I have a responsibility as a parent and as a public representative. That I should say that report at that stage. Can I just check with ESCOM if I have reported accurately my discussions and on the issue that I have had with you on numerous occasions? Chairperson?
Honorable Chairperson, yes. The matter you are relating to relates to the undertaking we had given around clarity of our funding model. And indeed, that is the case, that we are waiting for certain final directives from the shareholder and from National Treasury. And certainly, once the shareholder has clarified, then we will be able to come back as soon as possible.
Thank you very much. Having said this, I would like to invite ESCOM to table their annual results before us, and to say that maybe in terms of time management, we should agree first in terms of the manner in which we will run the meeting and the time allocation to if there is any particular approach that ESCOM prefers to take. Obviously, we know that the chairperson will do the overall remarks. But if you want to, other than that, in your report, if you want to subdivide it in any manner, please make me aware so that we then do time allocation and we know how to deal with leaving enough time for members to engage you on your results. Could you please advise us, apart from the chairperson leading the discussion introductory remarks, how else would you like to approach your report?
Chair, the outline is on the screen. We have essentially seven parts to our presentation. And we would recommend that if members are comfortable, that we go through point six, and then pause for questions and answers, because point seven looks forward, and perhaps that would be one way of breaking it up. Another way of breaking it up would be, but that would be more time consuming, would be to pause after every part to see whether there are questions for clarity, but I suspect it might take longer. So if members are comfortable holding their questions, that we go through the logical flow of the presentation. Parts 2, 3, and 4 are financial. Part 5 is operational. Part 6 then looks to the strategic initiatives that we're engaging in. And part 7 looks to the future. So one way would be to do the financial bits, 2, 3, and 4, and pause, take questions. Do the operational and strategic initiatives, and pause, and take questions. We'll be guided by what is coming.
Firstly, I always prefer to leave room for members to ask strictly clarity questions as we proceed, because some questions, if you don't ask them, you might get lost. So I will leave room for clarity questions, and if it's content questions, I will freeze them. But members, in terms of asking financial, taking financial results, and then taking questions, and then pause and questions, and then dealing with strategic issues. What do you think about that, Mr. Kornoff, Doctor?
Listen, the total presentation of ESCOM is 61 slides. Number 7, section number 7, the outlook is two slides. Can I propose that we allow ESCOM to indicate to us how long they're going to take to make this presentation for the 7 points? Once we have a time frame, you can be able to, you are able to make a judgment how long it's going to take and allow sufficient time for members to ask their questions. It'll be very disrupting, I think, to break off each section, because the outlook talks to each of the issues on the agenda, including the funding gap. So my proposal would be that ESCOM indicates to us what is the best time they can finish the 61 slides, and then open it for questions to him. Thank you.
No, I'll give ESCOM a time to respond. I was not proposing that we ask questions after everyone. I was saying either they present up to 7 or they present up to 5, then we take questions. But they must first indicate the time they need, as you are saying, for the overall presentation.
Honorable Chair, we can take for 67 slides 1 hour 15 minutes. 1 hour and 15 minutes. 75 minutes. 75 minutes in total.
You know what? I am inclined to say they must present. I'm trying to persuade you, members. The finances. Until, did you say is it until 4 or 5? Until 4. Then we take questions and then we deal with other issues after that. Okay. In that case, you will take your first, would it be 45 minutes or 50 minutes up to 4, Mr. Makwana? Thereabout. We're excluding your overview, except chapter, in that time frame. It's okay. Over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We welcome this opportunity that we are given to come before this portfolio committee in this house to share the financial results for financial year 2009-10. This being the financial year that ended on the 31st of March, 2010. Chairperson, my predecessor sat here under similar circumstances, presenting the 2008 and 9 results, which were very uncomfortable to present for him, Mr. Bobby Godson, in that financial year, we had posted huge losses. It was a year very much at soon after we had the unfortunate incidents of load shedding. And so we here today, Madam Chair and Honourable Members, with a sense of a spring in our step, in that the results we're here to present and share with you paint a totally different and positive picture of ESCOM. A picture of total recovery and a picture of a company that is on a solid path to fulfilling the mandate that it has been created for. I note, Honourable Chairperson, that some members of the committee have the physical copy of the annual report in front of them. May I, with your permission, point that pages 306, 307, of the annual report has a glossary of terms which may prove useful as we go, because sometimes as managers and as technocrats we tend to be too absorbed in our own technical terminology, so from time to time members may find that glossary useful. Let me also point, Honourable Chair, that this annual report, these financial results, are prepared in line with the Global Reporting Index. The significance of what I'm pointing out is that the Global Reporting Index, which is on page 312 of the annual report, actually encapsulates the standards of reporting that any company of the size and stature of ESCOM would want to work towards. Very quickly, Madam Chair, the GRI states that a good report must have, firstly, a description, a statement from senior decision makers in the organization on sustainability, including description of impacts on risks and opportunities. And hopefully you will see later when the finance director talks you through the achievements we made with the solving the embedded derivatives challenge that ESCOM had faced over the years, in terms of how that confirms that indeed this organization is on a path for better sustainability. note that in the year under reporting, ESCOM achieved quite a number of significant accolades. The Fund of Public Works celebrated ESCOM for its contribution to the National Public Works Program and projects around job creation. Engineers voted ESCOM as the best employer, preferred employer among engineers. And so those but a few are some of the accolades that ESCOM achieved in this particular financial year under reporting. Thirdly, the Global Reporting Index says that a company must speak to its report profile, scope and boundaries in terms of geographical boundaries, its economic footprint, so to speak. And so when we go through the operational highlights and challenges, we will speak to that quite at length. That a company, Chairperson, must talk to its governance commitments to external initiatives, stakeholder engagement, and we speak extensively in the annual report to how we've been engaging stakeholders, and I will mention but a few of those in my remarks. But there are details in the Executive Management Committee report, in the Sustainability Committee report. There's also a detailed report around ESCOM reputation and engagement with stakeholders, our risk management policy, and a whole host of other things around governance. Further, Chairperson, still in that section, the Global Reporting Index also requires the company to talk to its use impact on materials, on energy, on water, on biodiversity, on emissions, on effluents, and waste, and products and services. We have a whole section in the report that talks about electricity from power station to the customer, where we also talk about the highlights of the fact that if we look back to 1994, Chairperson, that 34% of South Africans had access to electricity. Today, in 2010, more than 70% of South Africans have access to electricity. And these are some of the highlights we mentioned in that section of the report. We talk at length about our ash disposal initiatives, direct energy consumption, primary energy sources, internal energy efficiency and demand-side management, energy initiatives, long-term water strategy, biodiversity, our policy around toxic emissions, key focus areas in the coming year, and a whole host of such other initiatives. The Global Reporting Index, Honorable Chairperson, also requires a company to report on employment, occupational health and safety, training, education, diversity and equal opportunity strategies. We've reported at length in our annual report. We'll share some of the highlights in our presentation. It also requires, Chairperson, in line with code HR5 of the GRI, that the company must pronounce on its approach to freedom of association and collective bargaining. And we speak at length here about our employee relations strategy. Significant, Honorable Chairperson, that this year we almost faced industrial action that could have caused harm to what this House of Parliament already remarked on earlier when the President quoted Mr. Sepp Blatter, who gave South Africa 9 out of 10 for hosting a successful World Cup and indicating that the country had passed a PhD or 9,000. ESCOM has been privileged to be part of that success because we kept the lights burning throughout the 2010 FIFA World Cup, a promise we made to the country and a promise we were deeply humbled that we were able to fulfill on behalf of this great nation. We also, Honorable Chair, are required to pronounce on social performance indicators and our impact on society in line with the Global Reporting Index. And in here we go at length to report on pages 68, 73 of the annual report and pages 55 and 56 on our position on climate change and the contributions to society, we also referred to as CSI or Community Social Investment. We also are required in terms of the Global Reporting Index to pronounce on customer health and safety. We speak at length on page 59 and 60 about our safety and public safety practices. I thought, Chair, by going through the Global Reporting Index, it would give members a sense of how to interpret the annual report and hopefully contextualize some of the slides that we will be going through in our presentation next month. So against the background of the remarks that I've made, Honorable Chair, we are here today to present to you has returned to profitability from the loss-making condition that it had been under in the previous financial year. We made positive profit. Yet, I must be hastened to focus the minds of the members of the House that although we have turned the sharp corner, we've not quite yet come out of the woods yet. There continue to be some substantial challenges around our funding moving forward in relation to what we expected to deliver to the nation in terms of electricity generation. We are keeping the lights on. We've continued to do so. Members would hopefully recall that we haven't had load shedding since January 2008. And therefore, we've gone through a successful World Cup, again as evidence of the fact that we have normalized the ship. However, we've always historically in this committee and throughout various public fora emphasized that 2011 will be a difficult year from a security of supply point of view, and the Chief Executive will speak a little bit to that in his operational highlights. We are making strides in terms of making significant investments in a brighter future. We continue to one of the biggest highlights of this year was the fact that the company deferred costs and saved 22 billion rands in the financial year under consideration. We continue to have a dedicated focus in cost containment, where we hope to save costs on an average of about 2 billion rands a year, all in an endeavor to ensure that whilst we seek help from our shareholders and elsewhere, we ourselves show commitment to running the organization in a prudent manner. A clear recovery strategy is in place with realistic timelines, and indeed, as I've already indicated, the first results have given us comfort that we are on the right path. In a long-term industry such as ours, where our planning horizon is always 20 years or so, our timetable, efficiency targets, and renewable energy commitments are ambitious and must therefore be interpreted as an ambitious attempt to claw back lost opportunities in terms of securing continuity of supply. We have a full complement of the board. We have a full complement of the executive team. We are ready to fire in all cylinders. In terms of the next slide, Chairperson, entitled On the Path to Recovery, the highlights of this report, as I've already indicated, we've had no load shedding since the end of April 2008. Our reserve margin is at 16.4%. An ideal scenario is 15%, so we've also exceeded that by 1.4%. When we prepared this, clearly it was pre-June 11th, where we were still saying we're ready to power 2010. We have powered 2010 FIFA World Cup with great success, and feel very proud of the men and women of the various organs of state who served with us in the Joint Operations Committee, ranging from National Intelligence Services right across to the police, right across to other state organs that ensure that the left hand coordinated with the right hand for all of us to contribute to the success of the World Cup.
And this committee
next, we certainly thank this, and I was going to say that, you know, they say you must reserve the best for last.
Okay.
Driving generation capacity, Chairperson, we have added 452 megawatts of additional capacity. We've added 600 kilometers of high voltage transmission lines, and we hope that by 2017 we'll have added 12,300 megawatts of additional capacity. And this is where the challenge moving forward comes in, as I said, that there are some far complex funding challenges we face in this regard. Significant funding was secured in this financial year, 21 billion rands loan from the African Development Bank, which contributed towards MDP, a 19 billion co-face in HEMIS, which covered ECA facilities for MDP and COSILE, Export Credit Agency facilities. 28 billion rands loan from the World Bank, which covers Medupi and allowed us to pilot two significant projects in renewable energy, the 100 megawatts concentrated solar power plant and the 100 megawatts of wind energy plant that we're busy working on. In terms of improved financial health, as I indicated, that the previous financial year was, to this one, was a loss-making one of 9.7 billion. We We are proud that in financial year 2009 and 10, the company has posted net profit of 3.6 billion rand. We renegotiated the commodity linked power agreements with key customers, and so as a result, had we not done that, Chairperson, and the finance director will speak to that at length, we would have eroded the share equity in our balance sheet quite significantly. We would be talking of a totally different company today. So because of these financial highlights, our auditors were comfortable to put ink to paper and confirm that we are slightly out of the woods in terms of the matter of going concern. They've expressed comfortable opinion that for the next 18 months they were comfortable that Eskom would be able to fulfill its obligations. We've had a supportive government, a supportive shareholder. This house has played a significant role in ensuring that we focus mind, effort on what is important for company and country. The shareholder, through the Department of Public Enterprise, Minister of Public Enterprises, has played a significant role in ensuring that we continue to focus on what's important. We've enjoyed nothing but good support from the Ministry of Finance, from National Treasury, and we really owe them a huge debt, together with members of this House, of the support that the collective arms of government have given us. The Minister of Energy, in terms of the policy directives that we get from time to time, have really been incredible. Honourable Chair, we've had incredible support outside of government, but within statutory institutions such as NERSA, statutory institutions such as NEDLAC. During this financial year, there was a potential that Eskom and the country could have faced a Section 77 national strike over the tariff increase. Various dialogue with the support of all key ministries and all key players in government within NEDLAC, support from business, support from civil society, the civil society and developmental chamber inside NEDLAC, ensure that all of us were able to, in the spirit of working together, we can do more, ensure that we curbed that potential Section 77 strike. And so today we speak of stability all around Eskom because of this support. In financial terms, strong government support provided financial resources needed to deliver the gold program. Government gave us 60 billion rands of subordinate shareholder loans, and 40 billion rands of which was advanced. We enjoy 176 billion rands worth of South African government guarantees, which give us confidence when we deal with fund managers within the bond raising market. As usual, Chairperson, every year we enter into a shareholder compact with the Department of Public Enterprises and the Shareholder Ministry. And as can be seen there, that Chairperson, we achieved most of the goals set out in the shareholder compact, except for two. In terms of new capital capacity expenditure, you can see there on the slides that we had targeted 50.54 billion that needed to be expended, but we only utilized 83 billion. Part of it came with us needing to defer costs. As I said, we also managed to create some savings of deferred costs of 22 billion rands. So, which means actually we didn't achieve the expenditure we were supposed to achieve, but we had to hold back, for instance, on that. On non-ESCOM learners, we had a target of 450 learners, we only achieved 236, and this is a sad outcome on our part, because we always want to exceed people development targets. And when we speak to the operating environment, it will become clear in terms of some of the challenges there. Going to the next slide, Chairperson, we continue to feel that we're making a significant contribution to the economy of our country. You know, power is like oxygen to the economy. And so it is important that as Eskom employees, as executives, as the board, that we continue to lead and manage Eskom in a manner that seeks to build a solid state-owned entity. And Eskom with a strong balance sheet, with a strong income statement, is good for South Africa, because then you have one more state-owned entity that is less burdensome to the national fiscus. And so it is in this spirit that we keep this as our core focus to ensure that we keep a strong ESCO running. As far as employees are concerned, we've enjoyed growth in our staff complement. We now have up to 17,390 permanent employees inside ESCO. In terms of their providers, we've got an increase from 7.755 to 11.85. And in terms of taxes, where we had robbed the state, if you like, of the benefit of 3.7 billion by making losses, we've now remedied that by giving the state in taxes 2.8 billion rands. In terms of communities, we continue to make significant contributions in communities. We've benefited communities through the CSI budget of 88 million in 2009. Although it has gone smaller to 59 in the spirit of prudence, we've not robbed the communities any less of a contribution. Our programs continue to be achieved at the same scale in the principle of less is more. But in total, really, the wealth created for South Africa has grown from 11 to 31.726 billion. In terms of electrification, I've already mentioned that since 1991, we've electrified 3.9 million homes. In 2009 and 10, we electrified 149,901 homes against the target of 145,615, exceeding that target, as can be seen. We continue to be committed to broad-based BEE and also committed to creating new industries in South Africa through our BUILD program. As you can see in that picture, new fabrication and training facilities were established, all in the spirit of ensuring that the BUILD program must help create local content, must help enhance jobs. So boiler membrane wall workshop exists now in Southern Gauteng. We've got two new CNC benders commissioned, new welding training centers, and new CNC header drilling machines. And as you can see, in terms of air-cooled condensers, we've got 90% local content. Major pumps, 55% are made locally. Heaters, 45% made locally. Outer casing for Unit 6, 100% made here. The feed water tanks, more than 80% local content. Heaters and drain recovery pumps, 20%. With these training facilities in Gauteng, we are able to help 1,400 artisans acquire accredited qualifications. We've inspired 60 engineers to have skills that they would otherwise not have, and 36 operators and 24 maintenance workers to do so. So given that South Africa will be in high build mode between now and 2030, if you recall from some of our earlier conversations in this committee that we need to double ESCOM's capacity between now and 2030. It is very clear that we won't have to invest more in this area and have more of these local components manufactured locally and therefore contributing in turn to job creation. So, Chairperson, I hope that by way of context and introduction and giving a broad overview, I've given you a sense of the climate in which we're now operating as ESCOM, a climate that we believe points to one solid path, that is recovery and stability. And so on that note, I'd like to hand over to Paul O'Flaherty to take us through the results from operations. Thank you.
Just before you do that, welcome, Mr. Khrela. I was a bit worried that we were not going to see you today. I was drafting a hot letter in my head to you. Thanks for coming. Mr. Makwana, you know we learn a lot from you guys. I don't know what a CNC bender is. I'm not an electrical engineer. Neither do I know what a CNC header drilling machine is. I know you referred us to the glossary. So it will help a bit if you sometimes, for the benefit of us and for the... So that we also go and look for these things when we do oversight.
I can tell you, sir. CNC means Congress National Committee.
What did you eat this morning?
Nothing.
Oyster.
Nothing.
Okay. I can give you
No, I was just saying CNC means Congress National Committee from Congo.
Okay, so it will help when just next to the text you do an illustration or an elaborative explanation of what you are talking about, bearing in mind that we aspiring engineers. Thank you very much. Mr.
Yes. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, members. Unfortunately, I'm not an engineer, but I'll try. In terms of our financial performance, you can see what Mr. McCorner was talking about, and I'll go into each of them as we proceed. But the turnaround in the profitability is really highlighted by two items on the income statement that you can see in front of you, and the first is the revenue. So if you recall, for the year ended 31 March 2010, we had an interim tariff increase from NERSA of 31%, and that obviously contributed to a significant turnaround in our revenue, because the number of gigawatt hours sold was slightly up on the previous year, so it's really because of the tariff increase. But we'll talk a little bit about that and really point out the fact that we even after the next 3 years, will still not be at what we believe is a cost-reflective tariff. In terms of the primary energy and operating expenditure, I'll talk a little bit about those. Our primary energy costs are the costs of our fuel or our coal, and the operating expenditure would be our people and our repairs and maintenance expenses. You can see there, just before the operating profit, that there's a significant turnaround in the embedded derivatives. So with the successful renegotiation on one of the four pricing agreements that we have, we've managed to turn around the loss that we suffered in the previous year of $9.5 billion to a $2.3 billion profit in the current year. So the $11.6 billion operating loss we reported last year has turned around to a $7 billion profit. And although we take some comfort in the fact that we're starting to get to a cost-reflective tariff, we're starting to get all our embedded under control, and we're starting to really focus on our operating expenditure, the issue of concern is our finance costs.
In terms of capacity, we manage in terms of watts, and then kilowatts, 1,000, mega, 1,000,000, and then giga, so it will be 1,000,000 times 1,000. For the...
That be a billion?
Yeah.
No. You say kilowatt, then a mega is 1,000, thousand, and then would the gigawatt be a billion? Mm.
The total South African system is 43,000 megawatts. Total South African system capacity. And our peak demand on 1 hour in the winter of South Africa, when it's the coldest, is close to 37,000 megawatts. So that gives you a sense of what it powers.
Can you just answer this other question that is asked? Was 1 megawatt, how many average households on an average day would roughly you supply?
We normally measure as we see in our households energy. So what we've just been talking about is capacity, megawatts. Energy we measure in terms of the number of hours we supply those watts. So if we look at our electricity bills at home, we would see that we have a rating for energy, which is kilowatt hours. So that's a unit that we use to measure. In terms of South Africa, our total energy consumption in a year is about 220,000 gigawatt hours a year. My typical bill at home, let's say for a month, might well be between 3,000 to 1,500 kilowatt hours for a month that a household will typically use.
Thanks, Chairperson.
To add to that response, Chair. So,
Chairperson,
can I just add to respond to the agent? So, for instance, Swaziland as a country consumes 200 megawatts, to give an example. Botswana is about 250 megawatts, 300 megawatts. The city of Joburg would be about, 2,000 megawatts. So that should give an example of scale.
Helps a lot. Chairperson, thank you for my question. In the context of what the Chairperson said, that the Eskom has managed to power 70% of the South African households, as long as they for call or for loud plant, he says that you have sold so many gigawatts. I want to relate what you've sold to the underlayment to what Chairman said, and that it translates to the 70 households that Eskom has now managed to identify.
Sure, we do have a slide coming up, Madam Chairperson, on that. Okay. If I can continue.
You know, I always have a special consideration for Mr. Mokwena, who is visually challenged. So, whereas we can grapple with slides before us and documents before us, I always give him a leeway to chip in with questions so that he does not lag behind. So please forgive me and the meeting
No problem, Madam Chairperson. The issue I was raising was on the finance costs. That on the income statement it looks healthy in that in terms of the international accounting standards, 1.2 billion rands worth of finance costs went through the income statement. However, our total interest bill is over 10 billion rand. And the reason why such a small amount is in the income statement is because we capitalize most of our interest into the power stations that we're building in terms of international accounting standards. So if you looked at the operating profit of 7 billion and compared it to the actual interest bill, which is over 10 billion, you'd see that we still effectively are in a loss situation if you looked at purely on that basis. And it'll show its way when we talk about the cash flow statement, because you'll see it very obviously there. In terms of some of the highlights, which are on the next slide, you will look at the third one down, and it sort of expands what I was talking about. Our interest cover, which is your total operating profit divided by your total interest bill, you will see there that we don't cover our interest. So for every 1 rand of interest, we only have a contribution currently of 57 cents towards that. So it still is a problematic situation for us. One of the good highlights in this particular highlights is the revenue per kilowatt hour. And here's where we translate to kilowatt hours. We sell over 220 million kilowatt hours, and our revenue per kilowatt hour was 31.9 cents on average versus the previous year of 24.7. And that's a good turnaround, because if you look at our total operating cost per kilowatt hour, in the previous year they were 25.9 cents. So we were selling electricity below our operating costs in the previous year. Now that has turned around slightly. We are selling electricity at 31.9 cents. And our operating costs were 28.2 cents. So we're making an operating profit, but as I said, still not enough to foot the total interest bill.
Is that as a result of what NERSA
permitted
you to do? Absolutely.
So I just want you to explain that. Sure. Yes, Madam Chair, the NERSA gave us an interim application for the year ended 31 March 2010, when they allowed us a 31% average increase in our tariffs prior to our MYPD2 application. So this was just for the past year. Obviously, in terms of the MYPD2 application, which relates to this current financial year, 2011, 2012, 2013, we have on average a 25% increase for each of the years. So that's where we are. In terms of our average days debtors and our bad debts as a percentage of revenue, this is an area that is being controlled by Eskom, but is an area of concern for us going forward. And although our bad debts as a percentage of revenue is less than 1%, and our average days debtors is 22, we are concerned, and it has been highlighted recently with the issues we've had with the municipalities in the Free State, that this will come under pressure as our tariff increases start coming through the system. And this is an area of concern for Eskom and an area where we're keeping a close watch. We need to make sure that we get paid for the electricity that we sell. Because if we don't get paid, we're just going to get into a worse and worse situation from which we cannot recover going forward. In terms of just a reconciliation of the 11.6 billion operating loss of last year compared to the 7 billion profit, just in graphical form, you can see there that the tariff, the 16 billion, was a significant contributor to the turnaround. That's the net increase in the tariff between the 2 years, the net increase in revenue. And you can see the significant turnaround in the embedded derivatives, so negotiating our way out of Mozal. So those are really the two highlights for the year. Tariff increase, you're selling electricity higher than your operating costs, just higher, and we've negotiated our way out of the significant embedded derivative on the Mozal contract, would be the takeaway from this particular slide. In terms of our revenue growth, and this would answer the question raised earlier, is that the total gigawatt hours sold is 218,000 gigawatt hours, which is 218 million kilowatt hours. That compares to last year's, or the previous year's, 214,000. So there has been a slight growth to 31 March 2010 of 1.7%. But it must be borne in mind that the largest amount of electricity ever sold by Eskom was actually in the 2008 financial year, where we sold 224,000 gigawatt hours. So obviously 2009's decrease reflected the economy. So we were going through a recession, and therefore there was less electricity sold. 2010 is a good indicator that South Africa has started to come out of the recession. And what we can comment on is that in the first quarter of this year, so from 1 April 2010 to 30 June 2010, if we compare that quarter to last year's similar quarter, we've actually grown by 4% in electricity sales. So there has been a significant turnaround in this current year, which puts more pressure onto the build program from our perspective. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The revenue per kilowatt hours, I explained, moved up from 24.7 to 31.9, and it really was as a result of the 31% increase granted by NERSA. In terms of our operating costs, total operating costs, I'll go into some of these, but this is both our primary energy and our operating expenditure. You can see that they're in graphical form, the various increases we've had, but I'll pick them up one by one. In terms of primary energy, it would appear as though we did not have our primary energy costs under control. This is our cost of coal, our cost of nuclear fuel, etc. And the total cost went up by 16.9%. However, this was an area of good performance by Eskom, because if you recall, we had the introduction of the environmental levy in the previous financial year of 2 cents per kilowatt hour. So we paid 2 cents environmental levy. That resulted in a 14% increase in primary energy costs, because it wasn't there in the previous year. So if you took that out, primary energy has only gone up by 2.1%. So that's a very good performance, we believe, from Eskom. In terms of our way forward, and in terms of our coal stock days, we're pleased to say that as of last month, we have exceeded on average 42 days coal stocks on hand. So we've been putting a lot of effort into getting our coal stocks up to the level that's acceptable. and we have not sacrificed the fact that we have cash constraints to cause any issues with the coal. In terms of our cash operating costs, which is our employees and our repairs and maintenance, you can see that our employee cost went up by 15% year on year. Our increase was 12% related to across the board increases, and then the 2%, or the rest of it, the 3%, was an increase in the number of employees. So our total employees in Eskom, as at the end of 31 March 2010, in the entire group, including subsidiaries, was just over 39,000 employees. And the rest of the operating expenditures you can see there. One of the challenges we've put to ourselves through the chairman and the CEO is that we as Eskom have to commit in the cash operating area to save costs per annum of around 2 billion rand. So we committed to bring efficiencies into the system in various manners to save the 2 billion, and I think the chairman was referring to that those particular activities are well on track. The 17.3 billion is the cost, the actual total cost of employees, and the 39,000 is the number. Yeah, absolutely. And I must just say that that employee cost is total cost to company. So it's salaries, it's benefits such as training, etc. It's the total cost of our employees.
Just for clarity, if you divide the 30,000 into the 17 billion, you will get the average pay of employee at Eskom.
Not the average pay, the average total cost that we incur on behalf of an employee. It's not what gets into their pocket.
How much would that be, more or less?
It's 450,000 rand per annum, average.
Per person.
Average. You would have seen in the income statement that there was a line item there called our fair value losses on financial instruments, and it was sizable in the current year, 5.9 billion. Versus 2.3 billion last year. But I think what the committee needs to understand is, although we have very good processes in place to buy local, there's obviously in our big build program certain industries and certain products that you just can't source locally. So we have quite a large foreign content in our build program. And in terms of how we manage our risks on the exchange, to make sure that we can cap our exchange rate, we take out forward cover the moment we commit ourselves to foreign expenditure. And that cost of taking out that cover was 3.5 billion rand last year. And we expect this to continue for a number of years as we roll out Medupi and Kusile. So that is how we manage our risks on the foreign exchange. We do not speculate. In other words, we do not commit ourselves to foreign purchases. And when we do that attempt to identify what the exchange rate will be at a point in time, we cap it. As soon as we commit, we lock in forward exchange so that we can manage that risk. In terms of the embedded derivatives, let me just spend a little while explaining the concept. Is that up until 2008, Eskom had four negotiated pricing contracts, three of them with BHP Billiton, and one of them with Scorpion Zinc in Namibia. And in terms of those contracts, when they were signed many years ago, the price that those customers pay for electricity was based on the commodities that they're smelting. So if the aluminium price, for example, went up, then our tariff that went up. So up until 2008, Eskom was in the money. In other words, those particular smelters were paying a tariff higher than our standard industrial tariff, which we call Megaflex. So up until 2008, they were paying higher. In 2009, many of the commodity prices collapsed as a part of the global meltdown, and particularly aluminium. So when you compare the future aluminium price at that point in time that we would obtain on these contracts for the remaining life, and you compare it to our industrial price, which is Megaflex, we have an opportunity loss. That's what an embedded derivative is. So you have to account for it, because you could have sold it at Megaflex, but you weren't. And that caused the large loss in the 2009 year. As the chairman points out, the aluminium price has continued to decline, and we've been given a three-year 25% average increase on our prices. And so the loss was getting larger and larger. So had we not negotiated our way out of Mosul, there would have been another significant loss on the income statement of Eskom for 31 March 2010. Virtual. It's virtual.
I want to have you always emphasize this.
Sure.
Because you can't be inconsistent. When you first reported the embedded derivative losses last year, you said they are virtual.
Yes, they are.
So I wanted to maintain.
And they continue to be.
It's also then important to remember that if you say you have made a profit this year, it's because you had the loss last year, which was virtual. So in actual fact, you didn't make the profit this year, if what you are saying is true.
But that's what the chairperson highlighted when you made the introductory
remarks. If I can comment on that, chairperson, is that's 100% right. It's purely an accounting entry. If we had taken out the embedded profit we've made this year, in other words, the reversal of the loss, that was 2.2 billion. Our overall profit was 3, so we would have still been profitable, but not to the extent that the turnaround has caused. Absolutely.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to get this right there. So you're saying that you were selling your electricity after the commodity crash. You were still selling it at a higher price than what you were actually, what was costing you to produce it to those four.
No, not at all. And in fact.
So then that's an actual loss then. I mean, is that not a.
No, because that's recorded in the operating line as opposed to the line item that we account for these losses at the income statement. If you recall what I said in 2009, in our total customer base, we were selling electricity at below our cost for everybody, on average. These happen to have more of that share of the loss at that line item. So this is purely a virtual accounting treatment of a future opportunity loss or gain. So for all customers in 2009, on average, we were selling electricity below our costs. In terms of just translating in that and how it works.
Sorry, sir, just a bit of order. The fact that the shareholder has subordinated shares, to what extent does that affect your profitability? The fact of that, the cost of the subordination will be simply given by the shareholder.
Yes, the loan that the shareholder has given us, of which we had drawn down 40 billion at this 31 March 2010, the interest we pay on it is determined only when we actually start making profit. So it's only determined when we start making profit. So there was a cost of it, because when we run our cash flows out over 10, 20 years, there is a cost to it, but it's very dependent on us making actual profit and cash. Yes, absolutely. So what that means in terms of the balance sheet is you can see the net derivative liability of all the embedded was 6.9 billion in the previous year, and it's come down to 4.6 and therefore the 2.2 billion that I spoke about that's gone through the income statement. In terms of Bayside and Hillside, which are the remaining two of the BHP contracts, we are currently negotiating those with BHP Billiton, and we certainly hope that in this financial year we can renegotiate those contracts.
We will give you time, like, you must remind us at the end of the meeting to map together with you possible timelines. I will
guide you, Jefferson, no problem, if you bring that up.
Just on a point of clarity, what Mr. O'Flaherty has just said, that if you negotiate your way out of the embedded derivatives, does that mean that customer is on the Megaflex tariff?
No. What we've got to remember is that BHP Billiton has a signed commercial contract with Eskom. So the position we have to reach is that the first that is crucial for Eskom is we must have no more embedded derivatives. In other words, it must be a rand-based tariff for a rand-based cost. The second crucial thing for Eskom is that we must be a price that's higher than cost. Because BHP will be on their side, because we're doing this on a company-to-company negotiation. We're not involved in go, this is company-to-company. So BHP on their side will be saying, well, I need to still pay a price that keeps my smelters in operation. So this is how we negotiate. And that's what we continue to do. But from our side, no embedded, and we must sell electricity at higher than cost. Otherwise, there's no deal.
Chair, I just want to understand this properly. And this is then to ask, do we then sell, so that the price has not changed. It's just the embedded derivative that has been taken out. So the payment in dollar and the aluminium price is not coupled to it. So BHP Billiton, for all intents and purposes, can still be paying half the price of what it's costing at Mosul or Bayside or Hillside for the electricity. Say, still 15 cents, but now just because the embedded derivative is out, the loss is less. Is that how it's working?
Well, the cost of our electricity, as I pointed out, is closer to the 30 cents per kilowatt hour at the moment. So they would have to be paying more than that for us to achieve the negotiation. So it's got to be more than that. If we get to Megaflex, we've done a very good negotiation. If we get somewhere below Megaflex, we've done a good negotiation. If we get below cost, there's no point in negotiating. So it's somewhere in that range is what we have to try and achieve. In terms of our net finance costs, as I said to you, is that the income statement reflects the 1.2 billion rand net finance expense, which looks favourable when compared to the prior year. But you can see that the total interest cost was 11 billion and we capitalised 8.2 billion. So our interest bill is high. In terms of our tax rate, let me just, the only comment I want to make is, although Mr. McConnor pointed out that we have a tax charge in our income statement, we're not actually paying tax. It's deferred tax. So we've got losses that we've incurred from prior years. So from an accounting point of view, you're now starting to utilize those losses. So we're not actually paying over any cash tax at this point to the revenue. In terms of liquidity and capital resources, this is really the issue we are challenged with at Eskom. Is if you look on the right-hand side at the top, you will see that our equity, our shareholders' equity, our accounting worth of this company at year-end was 70 billion rand. Our debt that we have borrowed, both long-term and short-term, was around 110 billion rand. And we are trying to do a build program of another 400 billion rand to be incurred, where we're still not at a tariff that gives us enough surplus or shareholders' equity. So what you're ending up in a situation is which you're going to be very, very highly geared as Eskom. You're going to have significant liability and a small equity. And we'll talk about some of the solutions we have around this. And as you all know, is you cannot run a commercial operation where you cannot pay your interest bill and that you have to keep borrowing to pay your interest bill. That's not a going concern, and that's not a situation that we as Eskom will allow ourselves to get into. In terms of our cash flows, you can see the problem that our cash generated from operating activities, which is your profit plus your non-cash items such as depreciation, was in the same as the prior year. So although we're showing profitability, profit isn't cash because of those virtual concepts we spoke about. And our cash flows are not improving in this past year. We've had to invest 48 billion to keep the build program going. And we had to balance it by taking out a net borrowings of 34 billion. So we manage ourselves by generating as much cash from operations, paying towards the build program what we can afford based on the borrowings we can take out. That's how we manage ourselves at Eskom. So we do not commit ourselves into contracts and payments that we can't afford, because then you run the company into liquidation. In terms of our working capital, you can see there that our average stock days at year-end was 37 days, but we're pleased to report that as of last month it's 43 days, and we intend leaving it there. In terms of our capital expenditure, although we continue to spend money, as you can see there, 47 billion to 57, this was, as Mr. McConnell pointed out, well below the budget. So we haven't been spending the money on our build program that we committed to spend, and the reason for it is because of our cash position. So we will only live within our means. In terms of the major part of the build program, you can see the progress there at 31 March 2010. So the Medupi costs, which include capitalized interest, remember I spoke about interest, the total costs for that are estimated at 125 billion, and we had spent by year end 32 billion. In terms of Kusile, our total estimated cost, including interest, are at 141 billion, and we had spent 14 billion, and so on with the other ones. Now, we often get asked about these costs and the escalation in these costs. If you took interest out of both Medupi and Kusile, because interest is just a factor of your borrowings, the actual contracted costs for Medupi, actual money that you can touch and feel, tangibles, is under just under the 100 billion rand mark. And for Kusile, is it around 105 to 110 billion. Now, Kusile and Medupi's contracts are all signed and being managed. Kusile, we've only signed up 80% of the contracts, and we've been delaying. We've been putting them on what we call limited notice to proceed. So the contractors are working in a slow manner because we don't have the cash flows to continue at the pace we would like. So once we have the funding solution approved, which we'll go into, we can then accelerate Kusile, and then we can give you an actual final number as to what those costs are. In terms of the points I was raising about the cash, is if you look in that column that says cash generated by operations in green, the 11.6 billion rand, you can see barely covered the interest bill we had to pay. That barely covers it. So you're just taking out borrowings and borrowings and borrowings. In terms of our debt maturity, and this is really a sober diagram that we constantly put up in front of ourselves, is we have long-term assets. They have lives of 40 to 60 years. And what we try and do in order to maximize the cash flows of those assets, we take out long-term debt. So you match long-term. It's no good taking out four-year debt to pay off a 50-year asset. So we try and stretch the debt out as much as we can. And it's very sobering because we have debt maturing in 2041, 2040. The World Bank loan, for example, is a 28-year loan. And we sit here as executive management, and we well know that in 30 years' time, we will not be at Eskom. And we say we better make sure that whatever we leave is sustainable going forward. That's very, very critical for us. We must make it in a sustainable manner. In terms of the funding gap, and I have addressed this committee before. I think it was in... Yes, I am. Is the slide I put up before is that the blue graphs are the additional megawatts that are required on the grid by 2028, 40,000 of it. And that estimation comes by assuming the demand for electricity will grow by 2.5%. through to 2028. So it's a simple assumption. Eskom is only with Medupi, Ngula and Kusile building up to 2017. 12,500 of the 14,000 required. Beyond 2017, Eskom has made no commitments. In terms of our funding gap, which I've put up in this committee before, our funding gap over 7 years is 190 billion rand. But included in there is 144 billion rand of estimated expenditure for projects beyond Kusile. And what we're saying is that must come out of our cash flows, because there's an RP2 coming out from government, and if you fund projects beyond Kusile, they must be done in a project finance manner, where you have all your debt secured up front. So if you take the 144 out, it means that Eskom shortfall over 7 years is 45 billion rand. And what we've done is we've looked at a number of utilities in the world, and what's very important for Eskom because that will enable Eskom to go into the international market and raise funds. So our goal is to maintain our credit rating. And where we come up with that, and these benchmarks are in there, is we've benchmarked ourselves against other utilities all around the world, and we've tried to benchmark what they do when they find themselves in these situations. And what's obvious is that if you look at the US utilities and the European, is that all of them who are on big bill programs keep their investment grade rating in place. And as I said, that's critical for Eskom. Right now, Eskom's credit rating is below what the rating agencies have awarded us. It's below that. And the rating agencies are showing us patience while we put together the solution with National Treasury and with DPE and come up with a final solution. What we are pleased to say is that we have a number of solutions. It's a hybrid of solutions, and it entails recapitalizing Eskom, as well as getting additional guarantees from government, and then raising international debt. And the combination of that, we believe, can make sure that we can finish off Casino. And we're not thinking beyond Casino, because we need to sort this problem out first. So we believe that we will get guidance soon, and then we'll be able to implement to go and make sure that we can do this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks. Members, you will see, can I just inform you, and I'd like you to be at your best in India, Mr. Nana. You have been on record from minute one of this meeting to the last, and there will be a replay of you on Saturday to all South African households. So if you don't listen to me in the video, they will see that you were there in the beginning of the meeting and you disappeared during the course of the meeting. And if you are silly, they will also see that you are being silly. Thank you. Members, let us take questions. But before we take questions, I just want to plead with you for two things covering the right issue during the next quarter. At the beginning, we agreed that they will come next quarter to report to us on the funding model, all the provisional reporting. I would like to attach to this, through your commission, that when they come to do this, they also at this stage do for us quite reasonably accurately the cost for Kusile and the cost for Medupi. Is that at all on the price? Okay, thanks. But also, let's bear in mind that next quarter, they will also come back to do coal technology, coal engineering, coal transportation, and new coal. And another factor that worries me that I want to feed with the committee that when we do this, we need also, we had a meeting with the mining houses. I think we must pay particular attention to coal exports. Also the fact that we've known last year when we were on oversight, the fact that Superior coal is being exported out of the country, and Eskom gets almost inferior, that yields little and that yields a lot of carbon footprint, whereas the best quality gets exported. So I was begging the committee to consider that when we come for coal and all, to recouple that with mining houses to account to us why they should change South Africans in that way, and so that we try to influence the issue of export of coal. these are the questions. But you will couple what you as you ask your questions, you will proceed them with your comments if you want to of the issues I've put before you. Let me take your hand. I'll move this way, that way, and then come back this way. Mr. Kololo, Mr. Kololo, everybody. Yes, I'll skip somewhere and come last team. I'll move this way. Mr. Mugwane, is your hand raised? Yes. Sorry, it's not even necessary. So, again, you are going to say something. Mr. Kololo,
and also commend ESCOM on the global report index that they have been selected as the best entity by the engineers to work for. That's very good. The second comment, Chair, will be on the sterling work by ESCOM of ensuring that the lights were on during the World Cup. We also want to thank you very much for that as a committee. You did a very, very good job. Hence, you got 9 out of 10. And then the other one, the Chair, on the path to recovery. In terms of your footprint, actually, I would like to know, I've seen the statistics on the electrification of homes since 2008. I would like to know about the, you know that we've got this key task by government. Actually, I would just want to know from ESCOM as to how much have they gone in as far as the rural electrification program is concerned, because we all know that government is one of the key priorities of government to electrify our rural areas. I think let me take that for now, Chair. Thank you very much.
Yes, it's very good, and I think for ESCOM as well, it must be a huge boost for the company and for your people who work there to be in such a positive, because I think ESCOM has really had quite a hammering and a bashing in the past. Just a smaller item, if I could just ask on page 6, you talk about your non-ESCOM learners. And, you know, when you're producing such good results, and to pick out just one little thing like this doesn't seem terribly fair. But if you can just explain your non-ESCOM learners and why actually is that down as much as that? And then, now I've got to be careful how I choose here. Can I perhaps go to the question of the World Bank loan? And there's been quite a bit of debate out there in the public about that and how that's affecting the environment and so on. Could I just ask, and I mean that is going ahead, there's no question about that, but just to ask you, how will the Medupi project actually assist in job creation? What is your plan there? You know, is that going to be significant? And then perhaps my next question would be, in terms of the challenges that we are facing at the moment with huge payments and bonuses and perks and everything else to our top management and our directors, and in view of all the strikes that we're seeing, and yes, ESCOM has had a very good, favourable time, but I think the anger is growing on the ground with this huge wage gap. And I'd just like to know, what is your view on the wage gap, and what plans are you making in order to perhaps stop that top a payout and reduce that wage gap? Have I had two or three questions? I'm okay. All right.
The non-ESCOM letter, the World Bank one, and your last one.
recovery fund. I think we were told that ESCOM is realistically on the path to recover. But we were warned that in the next few years, there could be challenges. Yes. Now, what is it that is going to affect what we are talking about today? We're on the recovery path today, and it could be next year that we could retrogress once again. What are we foreseeing? Also, the profit. I think Mr. McCollum said that we're making money for the state. But if you look at what the state gave ESCOM last year, you would find out that this year government gave ESCOM more than last year. I think it's what is this now? I can't see it now, but what was given to ESCOM last year is more this year than what the government gave to ESCOM last year is more this year. Yet this is the year of profit. Now, what is the reason for that? To look at that. Is it true that ESCOM is on a 94 billion debt? I'm just throwing that one. It comes from my mind. Is it true that ESCOM has a debt of up to, say, 90 billion?
Thank you very much. Chairperson, yes, three questions. We all know that the two coal power stations, Medupe in Limpopo and Kusuli in Mpumalanga, would come to the rescue of South Africa. Chairperson, earlier this year, in a government document, communications document, it was said to the public out there that Kusuli building started in 2007 and that it will be completed in 8 years' time. So there is almost 4 years left for this project to be completed. But in August this year, the Department for Energy told us that this whole project might come to an halt. It might stop even and be scrapped. Now, the conversation between the Department of Communications, Department of Energy, and Department for Public Enterprise is not very clear here. On the contrary, in August this year, the Department of Energy announced also that some other projects will then be considered, of which I am not aware of. Now, taking into account that the electricity need will increase by almost 3% per annum, and I think you agree with me, it means that within the next 20 years, we actually had to double our electricity supply as it is right now. Now, if Kusile comes to a stop, the building project, what is the alternative? Or can we prepare for numerous blackouts in the near future? See, my second question is, on the 1st of July this year, the Minister for Public Enterprises responded to a written question in Parliament, indicated that almost in this past financial year, an amount of 600 illegal electricity connections. And that's a lot of money, taking into account increases, tariff increases for electricity, etc. I just want to know what measures are in place at ESCOM, to make sure that this illegal connections and the loss of electricity can be limited to the minimum. It's been said in the past that local authorities don't want to go into, for instance, illegal settlements and informal settlements because of risk and safety reasons. Do you go into them, or what are you doing at present to limit this illegal connections and the loss of electricity? My last question, Chairperson, is at Madupe in Limpopo. Chairperson, it is common news that there were a lot of delays in the building process at Madupe due to problems with labor and trade unions and all these negotiations, and which led to a lot of backlogs in the building program at Madupe. And it also came to my knowledge that workers on site there received 3 food parcels every day, and that there was an agreement between ESCOM that after 1 year they would receive hot meals instead of food parcels. Now, I've got your pictures, Chairperson, I would like to hand it over to you. Pictures where these laborers are not happy anymore with the agreements between ESCOM and them, and where they threw away all these parcels. The whole area were covered by all these food parcels, which is, of course, wasteful and fruitless expenditure. I found it difficult to find it in here, in your annual report. And I want to know from ESCOM, you need a lot of money, but the thousands of rands are also wasted.
No, the food parcel you're referring to is cooked food in a suburb.
It is not cooked food. Apparently, it is cold food. And it was an agreement that will be changed by hot food. It never happened.
Yes. Yeah. I just want to clarify that normally we need food parcels to be a rosary, plastic with oil and spam and coffee and it's not that.
No, it is banana, it is apples and
banana, apple and a sandwich.
That's a lunchbox. Yeah.
A lunchbox.
Cold.
Not a food parcel.
Exactly.
That's what I wanted to say.
Chairperson, so my question is just, daily thousands of employees at Madupe receive free food on top of free accommodation and transport. Now, what are you doing? What are you going to do? Or did you solve this problem in the meanwhile so that there's no more delays at Madupe, that people are satisfied, that there are no unsatisfied workers, and that people's work ethic are 100% to carry on with their work? Thank you, Chairperson.
Probably the most important sentence in your whole annual report, and it says on page
credit rating, Eskom's number one priority is to maintain its current credit rating. If you fail in that, you're going to fail as a going concern. And I think we all need to work together. Your operations, your day-to-day operations, your vision, but also the comments we made in this committee and in Parliament and outside in the public. I think it can so easily damage that credit rating. And if we don't work together as South Africans to make sure that you maintain your credit rating, I think we're in for a very, very rough ride. So I just want to make sure that we, on the same wavelength, that we support you as far as your credit, maintaining your credit rating is concerned. Can I ask you one of the issues, and if I'm jumping the gun to operational issues, Chairperson, you must stop me. But your road repairs, in the current report, you spend 161 million rand on road repairs. In the coming financial year, it's going to increase to 950 million rand. That's if my numbers are correct, it's a 490% increase in road repairs. And you say you're going to, thereafter you will go into a shadow toll with Sunra. Can you just explain that huge massive increase in road repairs from the reporting year that is before us to the current financial year we're in? The second question is the coal quality. In page 79, your total system losses at Duva and Matla, the two stations, accounted for 78%, nearly more than three quarters of your total system losses. What are the reasons for these low coal quality, and what steps are you taking to correct that? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Freelo, Mr. Mukwena, Mr. Kandari, Mr. Dubo, Mr. Nana, Ngozi, Ms. Mentor, Mr. Minister, in that order. Hope we all know who is picking up. Mr. Freelo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Seems you're determined to get me to speak in this meeting. I must apologize. I'm also suffering from a bit of jet lag because I've just returned from China on a research trip, in fact, which was very instructive looking at the problems that they face in the electricity generation system. And one of the things that I picked up there was, in fact, with regards to their transmission lines, is in fact one of their biggest barriers at the moment. And it's something which I think is often underreported in South Africa as well. With regards to the need to strengthen our transmission lines and also about the placing of those transmission lines. So if we want to get generation from wind, for instance, we need to make sure that we get those transmission lines going there. What are the plans in place in terms of the transmission lines, in terms of strengthening that, and in terms of where you're going to send those transmission lines out to? I'll be interested to hear. The other one is with regards to the negotiations over these four special contracts. My understanding around this as well is that all other electricity in South Africa that is sold is regulated by NERSA in terms of the different tariff structures, and there's, I think, 110 different tariff structures which companies can apply for. I mean, why is it that we can't go to these four companies or these four contracts and say, well, in fact, from now on, we are only going to allow electricity to be sold in South Africa according to these regulated tariffs? And anyone who wants to buy electricity in South Africa will need to conform to those pricing structures. Why is it that we can't bring them in under the regulated tariff structures? Why is it that we have to have special pricing arrangements with these companies? Surely that should be at the starting point for our negotiations, so that we can avoid these special situations, so that we can avoid the perception that some companies are getting a far better deal than other companies. If it's all regulated and it's all set down by NERSA and everyone knows what the pricing arrangements are, then we can get away from this particular situation. Why wasn't that the starting point for these particular negotiations? I'll be interested to hear. And then just lastly, I've asked this before, but I am so interested in what has been the progress in terms of the concentrated solar power plant and the wind project. Because one of the concerns that was raised last year, that in fact was that we weren't given enough money by the World Bank for the CSP project, and that we would have to raise more funds elsewhere or leverage more funds elsewhere to do that. Is that still the case? Have we got the funds to build this? And if so, when can we expect these projects to come online? Because obviously this is something of central concern. Thank you.
Happy you from China. Can I discount you on the committee trip when you go to China? No, I'm joking. You won't go with that. Remember, we'll talk about our intention at the end of this meeting after this. Okay.
I'm sorry, Chair, before you take the next member. Can you on our behalf ask Honorable Khaila whether he will be soon be an issue in the Western Cape to have the post directly available in the Western Cape?
Mr.
Mugwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Number one, just to compliment ESCOM, and I want to share the views of other members, because ESCOM is very unique. Public utility is actually the underpinning of our life, our economy in the whole country, needless to say. And the leadership of ESCOM has done remarkable work, honestly, to pull through to where they were, to where we are at the moment now. I was very proud as parliamentarians who conduct oversight on them. And as the doctor said, all the members, they are very accountable. It's very accessible. They don't run away, they don't go out, they don't send junior people to account and so on. One is very consistent in terms of life. And now, from the bottom of the summit, this is what makes our life easier. So I'm confident that we will pull through to all the difficulties we have. That's number one. Number two, Quebec has been left out of account. I don't know whether they're still going to deal with that operation and so on, but I would have loved to hear something, perhaps. Even in the introductory statement of the chairperson, because it's quite a huge issue, as you know. And the context of that is going to be decommissioned now. Our that has to work through some prognosis so that we do not, we're not faced with the situation that appears now to be facing us in another separate area of water, where they say that the water levels are still developing, and they are going to catch up with us in the next 17 years. So I would like us to be apprised in due time about the going on in Quebec. I know they can come to account to us, but I suppose it would be fine because it has to be incorporated into your overall presentation. I will leave the question of renewable energy because the Honorable Khalil asked it. Also, I've loved to hear some comments about it, and also the independent power producers. Chairperson and just smuggle a suggestion here. But also, be a good idea to actually create a slot where, perhaps in collaboration with the Central Committee on Energy, we can come together just to find out the state of readiness of all these independent power producers. Because that will assist to allay all fears. That the honourable member, Dr. Dickens, has clearly elaborated, we don't want to caught up with our traditions. Finally, Chairperson, quickly. Okay, well, I mixed them with some compliments, you know. So, thanks for indulgence. The point is that in order to obviate next year's predictable strike, you should give this information to the union leaders that you have here. You see, because now they raised the question last time that why they wanted so much money, because they learned that you posted a profit of 3.7 billion, etc. And now, today, this best through the guidance of the chairman, actually, those are actual figures. So, if they had known, the leadership of the unions had known that these are actual figures, and not really a real profit per se, then they would have moderated and dampened the percentage that they ask for in terms of interest. So I'm just saying, must be proactive now and not wait for next year when the season of strikes, comes. And then we start now running around and says, must know. Take them into the confidence. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. I want to start with my first question, and it's about the special pricing agreement. And, you know, I have here a document that says that it's called, I don't know, I will... It's called the Developmental Electricity Pricing Program, and it was approved by cabinet, so it might be a cabinet document. I don't know, maybe it's top secret and I don't even know it. I hope I don't get into trouble. Okay, but I don't think it's a cabinet document, but it was approved by cabinet. So it says on page 12.3, it says it is specifically recorded that the confidentiality clause about this, and I quote, shall not prevent the parties mentioned in clause 12.1 from submitting reports or providing information where it deems necessary or where it requires the law to any organ or department of state, which includes parliament or cabinet, and it regards to the applications received, processes, and implementation in terms of the DEPP. Now, this document sets out exactly how the special pricing should work and the downstream beneficiation, and then we can give them a little discount, and then Parliament has to approve that special pricing. Shall I pass it?
I wanted to raise a point of order.
It says the Developmental Electricity Pricing Program guidelines presentation to the minister.
There is a point of order, yes.
And it says.
The documents before us, the documents that are before us are those that have been presented by ESCOM.
Yes.
And the honorable member is referring to another document. I have been told that it is a text chahim. And therefore, I am of the view that that document and whatever is actually starting from that document is irrelevant. And if the honorable member would like that information to be tabled before us, he can be able to do so at an appropriate time so that we can actually interact with it. For now, it is totally irrelevant with respect.
Whatever you have read previously, but speak
Madam Chair, the question I wanted to ask about the special pricing agreement is why every time we ask questions in Parliament, is it said that it's confidential and we're not allowed to know it? And I just wanted to prove that they should give us the information if we ask for it. I would like to know what is the price of these special derivatives or what BHP Billiton pays for their electricity to Mosul. The Mosul is now sorted out, you say, but to Hillside and Bayside. I would like to know, because the minister in a question answered in Parliament has said that Mosul was paying 12.2 cents and that has now changed to our benefit as what the statements from Eskom were. So I would like to know what are those prices that they are paying, and if, does that account for the rest of the 6 billion rand loss that was shown last year, the remaining of the 9 billion. Then I wanted to ask about that is the one question, the illegal connections. I've seen a report from SARPA, which is the South African Revenue Protection Association, which says that Eskom, in the Eskom Act, has now taken out, or by legislation has taken out, that the illegal connections or the theft of electricity is not a crime anymore. So they can't police illegal connections, or they can't police the theft of electricity. Now, I would like to know if this is the truth, and if it's the truth, what is Eskom doing to rectify this problem? Because it will be an untenable situation if anybody could just steal electricity, and then Eskom can do nothing, and we just say, well, we just rely on the honest people to pay our accounts. So that was, and then the other one was on the downstream beneficiation and the coal mines. I've seen a press statement in the press that went out last week that Eskom is saying that the quality of the coal that is delivered to its power stations are of an inferior quality, and they can't die steenkool is van so 'n gehalte dat hulle dit nie kan gebruik in die kragstasies nie, en hulle wil weer teruggaan na die myne toe om seker te maak dat hulle die regte kwaliteit kry. Maar my verstaan, it's my understanding that the coal that is supplied to the power stations are of an inferior nature, and that's why they are used in power stations, because if they use the prime A quality coal that comes out of the coal mine, it would actually melt down the whole power station. It would be too hot to handle for this power station. I mean, these power stations are built so that they can use the quality of the, must be of that nature as what they are getting. And now, and then it...
No, you stopped me, mate.
But I never asked the question. On that call, what is the question on the call? I was explaining something and I was going to get to the question. Okay.
Done away with something from the Act so that they cannot or they do not prosecute illegal connections. Can I remind you that Eskom has no power to write the laws or to unwrite the laws? If anybody has done that thing, it will be this House of Parliament, and that question, if anything like that should have happened, it should have happened in this committee or in the Committee of Energy, and we are not aware of it. So I don't understand your question. I'm giving you an opportunity to clarify your second question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for pointing that out. You're quite correct. I'm sure it's not Eskom's responsibility, but or they that took it out. But it is a matter of fact, or these people have stated it as fact, that it has been taken out of the Act, by whom, I don't know. But they can't police illegal connection or the theft of electricity. They are hamstrung by that. And if it is so, then what is Eskom doing to fix the problem that they can prosecute the people? And it goes to the debt of Soweto and all these other places that have big outstanding debts. They get nothing about it because the electricity is stolen, and we are not assisting them in that manner. So we must, if it's an act, we must fix the act. That is my, I want to get, if it's so, I just want to know. Thank you, Madam Chair.
About the act, it is our prerogative to deal with it. If there is any such thing,
but
if
it's true or not.
No, it's like, which will be the pastoral teaching authority level. If there is anything about the act, it's us that must answer that question. Mr. Dikobo?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just also to add my congratulations, good report from ESCOM. My first question relates to skills development in our country, the role that ESCOM plays, and maybe even other parastatals. It may have sub-questions. It will be up to the chair to rule whether they constitute independent questions. Also relates to what Ms. Gomez has said, the question of non-ESCOM learners. I want to know where these learners come from. But just to say, I'm very happy to see that there are people outside ESCOM who benefit from the training of ESCOM. But also just to say, there was a very big summit on FET last Thursday and Friday, Friday and Saturday, in Johannesburg, and I'm disappointed that ESCOM and other parastatals, who are supposed to be the biggest consumers of these skills, were not there to come and make an input. Well, question now, and second one, maybe sub-question. What relationship is there between ESCOM and our FET colleges, in particular public FET colleges? Because one of the complaints that we get from colleges is that their learners are not getting places for experiential training. And either from the public sector, and as they were talking about the public sector, but the next question was, what about parastatals? Don't they have a role to play? I hear also that there is a training center in Gauteng, possibly almost like that, what we had from South African Airways, of the South African Airways Technica. I'm asking myself whether they've ever considered bringing lecturers from FET colleges to come and be trained. I assume that they also need quality learners, quality engineers from these FET colleges. And I'm saying this also against the background of what we had in the past, that ESCOM had imported artisans from Asia. And I'm just trying to ask, when are we going to grow our own timber? If we know we need skills, but these scarce and critical skills that ESCOM needs that are not there in these FET colleges, what is ESCOM doing? Maybe the other two would be just be very brief. The question of bad data. I just want to know who are they? Who are they? Maybe the extension of that question would be, they have mentioned something about Swaziland, Botswana, Zimbabwe maybe also, that we might be or we are providing electricity to them. Would they be part of the bad data? Or bad data are here? The last one, thank you, Chairperson. Profit that ESCOM is reporting today. Chairperson, is this the result of prudence on the part of ESCOM or the result of what people in the communities are calling a rip-off because of the exorbitant increase that ESCOM got from NERSA?
Thank you. Mr. Lana?
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, may I firstly congratulate the new CEO of ESCOM on his appointment and wish him well for the future. Secondly, clearly ESCOM is behind times. There is no more BEE in South Africa. We now call it ZEE, Chairperson. Now change sort of at the that E. No, I don't understand. What do you this one translate? I do. No, I read it on the Sunday newspaper, but it's now Chairperson, my question, the first one, Chairperson, is is around the World Bank Group. I do not know whether it has any relevance in this annual report. But I know the Secretary of the Labour Federation, Kosatu, was very consistent with this question, and somehow he kept quiet. I mean, and it was a correct question, Chairperson. The conditions that were laid down by the World Bank in giving us the loan. If Eskom is at liberty to divulge those, I would really be very, very glad, Chairperson. Because some people do want to believe that we somehow signed off our liberation. Second question, Chairperson. No, it's a second. You said that was the first one. What's happening to today, sir? Did you drink something? No, the second question, Chairperson, will be around the BHP bulletin and zinc contract. You see, Chair, I find it quite disheartening that our utility would sell electricity to a multinational which actually operates outside the boundaries of our own country and creating jobs in Botswana and other countries. Whilst in fact a smelter which was supposed to have been operated inside the country in one of the poorest provinces in the Eastern Cape, Lucha, could not secure energy supply on the basis that there wasn't enough. Now, I want to check with Eskom, how old are this contract? How far ahead are we going to go with them? What are the prospects of Eskom considering scrapping of this contract and probably redirect that energy to the smelter which was supposed to have been established in the East Cape? Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the indulgence, Chair. I can ask another question, but it would be a follow-up question for what the Honorable Gordon Wolf asked about the what they call the damage caused by the trucks, particularly in the Mpumalanga province. In fact, would be glad to. What are there any programs in place or any plan in place to try and reduce the impact that the trucks have to damage those roads in Pumala? Is there any plans by the government?
Members, can I join you in congratulating Eskom about the thoroughness of the presentation before us, but also of the transparency and open engagement? I must tell you that often a week does not pass when I don't speak to either Mr. Makwana or the new CEO, and congratulations, sorry. Before go and thank you, Mr. Lana, that you are appearing before us for the first time as appointed CEO. Congratulations, and we wish you all of the best. Thanks. That once we get to both of them, or either one of them, sometimes more than once, and we get to them, pure pleasure, whatever you seek to know from them, or whatever you draw attention to, their attention to, they are always responsive. No. You are going to harass them. I'm not listening to them. And actually, even during the week of the potential strike that was at that particular instance, given the difficulty of the relationship, the tax relationship between the chairperson of the board and the CEO of ESCOM, I am not happy with it, because observing the two of them also, they work very well, the relative together with the board, that it should not be because you have nice personalities. It should be something that is internally well regulated, so that if tomorrow they are no longer there, the good working relationship and the way that they are performing should be something, should be a company, should not be a personality and individual. And I also join you to congratulate them. I share your concerns about non-ESCOM letters, because we are sitting on a ticking bomb in terms of youth unemployment in this country, and we cannot see from urging ESCOM to double and triple their efforts in doing something about it. They are failing to reach their own target. They are failing us broadly in getting the problem of youth unemployment, because if you take them through your leadership, you are creating possibilities for them. I'm also very concerned about the issue of industries that you claim cannot be sourced from South Africa, because in your plan, you are not telling us what are those industries, and as you are sourcing, what plans are you putting in place to make sure that 5 years, 10 years down the line, you have, as you saw from these international suppliers, created, as you enter into contact with them, you find them creating the possibility to create those things, manufacturing plants or services of that. In the very solid, we can ask you to SOE about your big plan, long term planning, so that you just don't end by saying you can't solve something from the Republic. You must tell us what are your plans for something, because you will always produce questions and you will always need those things. But what are your plans going forward to make sure that those things that you are solving internationally, 10 years down the line or 15 years down the line, you will solve from within the Republic? My concern also about the World Bank loan is, are there prospects of the second loan? I hope not. As much as we are concerned about the conditions of the first World Bank loan, I hope we will do everything possible to. That's why we are so in a hurry to have the funding model settled, because we want to avert you taking up the second World Bank loan. And we will do everything together with you collectively to make sure that your funding model is resolved, so that we move forward to opportunity and we reduce the probability of it. And if you see the pipeline, tell us, so that we work very hard to help to prevent the second load from the world.
Okay,
thank you. My last concern is my personal question. If you say that if you remove what is not your responsibility moving forward from your funding gap, you reduce your funding gap from 144 billion to 45 billion by 2017. For me, that does not carry very well with the picture that you are painting of mounting economic growth. If we agree that ESCOM will remain the base, will remain the producer of base energy, and then whatever things that we'll be doing to augment the base load, which is produced by ESCOM, I fail to understand how your funding gap will be as little as 45 billion if you project economic growth moving forward. If you take into account what the President says and what the Minister of Finance says, to say that we should be growing in the margin of 7%. In the foreseeable future, I think you must go and do a bit of homework. For me, that sounds too little. I don't think that you have anticipated and quantified very carefully the prospect of economic growth and the demand that will be put on you to support that economic growth and to push it into the supply in terms of One, like the reason for the claim that you said about you were invited to ask the issue that Mr. Fandale is correctly raising, the issue of coal quality. We will cover that with your coal issue and coal transportation. We actually talk about removing the coal from the road to the rail. And I might also say that the, I am very excited for the discussion of France and sometimes the community about that aspect. And we want to see an attention to that aspect. I know you might touch on this when you do your other two daily reports of the annual results. But this is one thing that we worry a lot about. Thank you very much. You will respond to your questions bearing in mind then, but then we might not have at one or half one because there are two short slides that we are going to do from ESCOM. So it means we are not going to ask a second round of questions on the financial. We may only allow one or two follow-up questions to each other, but please remember that there are two more slides to ESCOM. Over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I'll pick up the direct financial issues and then I'll hand over to Brian for some of the others. Let me first pick up, there's a number of issues around the special pricing agreements, so let me pick those up. Let me just say up front that we have legal contracts in place with the smelters. And our attitude has always been to respect the law of contract. So our attitude in these negotiations has never been to run to our regulator, to run to our shareholder and say, sort it out. Our attitude has been one of, how do we commercially arrange ourselves to get a better deal in these contracts? So that's the only brief by which we have been undertaking it. In terms of how long they have been in place, they've been in place for many, many years. They've been in place a long time. The history of it goes back to when South Africa had surplus electricity supply, and South Africa wanted to grow industry, and it entered into contracts that at the time may have made some sense in terms of growing industry in South Africa. So we found ourselves as Eskom in 2009, obviously where these were very adversarial to Eskom and we needed to get out of them. So as I said, it's not just a matter of saying, well, NERSA or government, why don't you sort it out? In terms of the confidentiality issue, this is an issue that I'm not going to give you the price, but all I'm going to say to you is that it is not only Eskom involved in these agreements, it's also BHP Billiton, which is a listed company, and it has its own confidentiality that it needs to protect. It is a competitor in the world of aluminium, and it needs to disclose, in terms of its shareholder value, whatever profits, etc., or losses it needs to make. So, you know, on that particular issue, I won't disclose it, but I will confirm that the remaining $4.5 billion loss that sits on our balance sheet as of 31 March 2010 is basically the losses of the future prices on Hillside and Bayside compared to our estimate of our Megaflex price. In terms of the World Bank loan, let me just clarify, and we have spoken to more before at this committee, is that this is a loan that's a direct investment loan. It is not a development loan that the World Bank sometimes enters into with developing countries, where there will be some onerous conditions in terms of growth, in terms of industries, and in terms of, you know, the law of the land that may or may not be in place. This is a special investment loan. That loan has the following key requirements and conditions. Firstly, the loan is repayable in 28 years from date of first drawdown. Secondly, for the first 7 years, we have deferral on any payments. So we just fund the interest, but there's deferral on capital payments. So it's only repayable after the first 7 years. The interest rate we pay on those loans is linked to international interest rates, but effectively, as of last week, is equating to around 9.7% interest rate, which is well in line with what Eskom borrows at currently. In terms of the debt service cover ratio, they expect us that we've got a 2.5 times debt service cover ratio. So in other words, our funds need to cover our debt and interest 2.5 times. Eskom is way off that. Way off that. We're not even there. And they've given us 3 to 4 years to get there. If we don't get there, then we have to go and give them a game plan as to how we're going to get there. So it's very, very critical that we live within our means and manage to satisfy that ratio. But that's a normal covenant that you would get in terms of loans. In terms of the other requirements is the World Bank made significant waivers on Medupi in that they are funding specific contracts. And they're giving us money for contracts we had already signed. And only for the remaining contracts, which is about 4 of them, do we actually have to follow to the letter the World Bank procurement guidelines, which are quite onerous, but are very much in line with our own PFMA. Okay, so they're slightly different. They've got some additional fraud and corruption clauses that you have to include. So they're quite onerous in terms of paperwork, et cetera, that you have to follow. So in terms of that loan, I think that answers that on the loans. In terms of the bad debts, the bad debts is not relating to electricity we sell to other regions. There is no bad debt arising from that. The bad debts are the issues that we have already spoken about in this particular committee, and they relate to some of the municipalities like Soweto, and they also relate to some of the gold mines like Aurora or Grootvlei that are in trouble. So that's what makes up our bad debts. And as I say, it remains under 1% of our revenue. In terms of the profitability and the concept of prudence versus ripple, I think what I've tried to portray today is that because we can't really pay our interest yet because of an accounting standard that says capitalize it, we're actually not in a position to have any surplus money to even pay our interest. And therefore, unless we can get higher tariffs, we cannot pay interest, and therefore we have to commit ourselves as Eskom to just carry on as is and not continue to build new power stations, because you just get into an ever spiraling debt. So that I don't think anybody wants. In terms of just coming back to the issue around the aluminium smelts in the Eastern Cape, again, all I can say is that these contracts were entered into some time ago. The major one was Mozal. But you must remember that the power that we are providing to Mozal comes from Cahora-Bassa. So it's Mozambican power to a Mozambican industry. In terms of Bayside and Hillside, that is South African power to South African industry. I would suggest, unless our stakeholder pushes Eskom to develop certain industries, that it wouldn't be feasible to open up an aluminium smelter in South Africa today and be charged a megaflex price, particularly if you've still got to build that particular smelter. I don't think it would be profitable if I just did very rough calculations on that. Based on the price of aluminium. So the rand price was fine, and
sold it for cheap, and
we are supposed to speak out.
No, I just need to understand this,
yes,
because I don't understand it.
Madam Chair, we bought electricity at a cost that was higher than the price we were selling it at ultimately. That's the bottom line. In terms of our debt and government, and there was a question also about government gave us more money than they did in the previous year. I think as at 31 March 2010, Eskom actually had 110 billion rands worth of debt on its balance sheet, not 94 billion, 110 billion rand. And in order to fund Medupi and Kusile, that is going to have to increase significantly. So the fact that we may have shown a profit, as I said, your profit is not cash, because you're building power stations, you still need money to come in, and that money comes either through profit, either through direct loans from government, or either through external loans that you need to get from people like the World Bank or international bonds. So all the government has done is follow the program of giving us the 60 billion rand that they committed to give us. So I think that answers that particular question.
You know, you say I told you to tell us about 110 billion.
Yeah.
Are you in the red?
No, I think what we've said to you, Madam Chairperson, is that with the tariff, the first tariff this year of an additional 25%, our internal goal is that we at least have to this year cover our interest bill. So make profit and be able to cover our interest bill so that at least we actually square. From the second and the third year of the 25%, we now start getting additional surpluses over and above that, which we can then use to fund the power stations along with the debt that we have. So I did say at 31 March 2010, we were in the red. Yes, absolutely. But we're certainly going to be coming out of it in the current year and in the year thereafter, but only because we're getting the right tariff or a better tariff than what we had. Before I hand over to Brian, I think I take your comment on the exclusion of projects by Eskom. But Madam Chairperson, all we have to say on that is that we're here to make sure that this company remains a going concern, and that as directors of the company, we cannot trade recklessly. So we can only commit to what we feel we can fund. The whole issue of power beyond Kusile is a South African country issue that hopefully will be answered in the RP2 process. I can hand over to Brian.
Thank you, Jay. Let me work through the questions from the members. We have noted the issues that you've raised around those that you need to come back on, and we will do so. And we've also noted really the congratulations for the work done. I must say it's not us as executives, but it's the 39,000 people out there that has all made us proud, and I think we have to recognize them. The first question deals with rural electrification and our progress in that regard. The members, unfortunately, not here. It is an area of concern for us as well, the pace at which we're dealing with that. You know that electrification is funded through the Department of Energy, and particularly with regards to schools and clinics, that needs that to be achieved. And we certainly will be looking at how do we accelerate rural electrification, and particularly schools and clinics. There's a question around non-ESCOM learners.
Sorry, Jack. That is a question arising from that. For that, you only had the same question. All, I think we are interested is that on slide number 7, when it said 2009 to 2010, electrified 149,901 against 145,600. What we're interested is that the rural
that, these questions emanate from that observation that your electrification program is problematic, and we want to see a tilt towards rural electrification.
Chairman, you're correct that the majority of electrification is from the urban areas. I must remind the committee, firstly, that as ESCOM, we the agent in executing electrification. We do not fund it. We don't prioritize the areas. We don't do any of that. That is what is directed to us by government. We have a concern ourselves as that South Africa will not get to universal access unless we increase the funding. The rural areas obviously are a lot more difficult with lines that need to be built, and we certainly would like to see increased funding to deal with that. As ESCOM, we will respond. But currently, we direct it by government, both national, provincial, and local government, as to where do we electrify. Our concerns are twofold. One is that, firstly, the funding is inadequate for us to get there, and we need to change that approach. We will certainly respond. Part of how we see ESCOM going forward is that we certainly see ourselves playing a role in driving universal access. There are new solutions on the table. They may well be very innovative renewable solutions as to how you introduce those into the market and make sure the rural areas get access to electrification.
Very quickly, I think that we should look at having a joint meeting with the Committee on Energy on this particular issue. It's a really an important issue that we need to get to grapple with.
Thank you for that. I'm just discussing that to say you want to put that we have to meet with
Chairman, there was a question around non-ESCOM learners, and really, if you look at our annual report, it really relates to the definition that we've used around bursars that we have, that we've not made the target, and we've not included all our bursars that we have in our definition. If you look at our learner support, it is significant. We have over 4,500 learners that we train. A lot of that certainly has got to do with ESCOM's own need, but also wider for the industry. I take the comment, particularly in terms of the FET colleges, and how do we give experimental learning opportunities for children to finish their education, and we'll certainly go work a lot closer with the FET colleges to address that. The World Bank loan, we have hosted the World Bank, one of the vice presidents, last Friday at Madubi. Madubi currently have over 7,000 people that are employed, most of them from the local area, and that employment is extended significantly in the country as well. There's significant employment creation through this project. We have taken the bank through exactly what we're doing, and I think it's been a very, very successful visit in that regard. There was a very pertinent question about the path to recovery and what are the challenges that we face. What will affect this recovery? We as ESCOM have made it very clear that the electricity supply will be constrained due to the increased economic growth and electricity growth, particularly in 2011 going onwards. And then the second period, which you have related to, Chair, what happens in 2017, 2018? And that is purely because of the economic growth. And that certainly would impact this recovery. And for all South Africans, we must work together now to find solutions from the private sector in terms of generation options, to find solutions in terms of saving electricity across all industries, from residential areas to businesses, including ESCOM's contribution in that regard. We must find solutions in terms of how do we bring renewable energies that can now come onto the table. So that is certainly one aspect that will affect the recovery. The second aspect that Paul has dealt with would then be the funding of ESCOM. If not completed, and I'd like to then address the second question. South Africa has got no other viable alternative in terms of baseload capacity other than Kusile. To deal with the country's energy needs, we have to build Kusile, and I think that has been confirmed by the Department of Energy as well. And therefore, it's important that we do find a funding solution that ensures completion thereof. But more importantly, as a country, we would have to make a decision this year as to what we do after Kusile. And that is a question that Paul earlier related to, Chair. The issue around illegal connections remains a challenge for us. We would not profess that we have solved it. It remains a big challenge for us and certainly for the country. We have specific measures in place. We are looking at specific technologies that we are rolling out on a pilot basis that requires a significant investment, and we're doing those, as well as particularly working with communities to understand the impact of illegal connections. But there's also a question of electrification. If we can bring proper electrification to our communities, then hopefully we can deal with that. But it remains a challenge for us. There was a question around Medupi and the labor issues we have. Medupi, Kusile, and most of our projects has got a project labor agreement that we've put in place to deal with regulating labor between contractors and organized labor. That is in place. That regulates working hours, payments, and since then, certainly we have a massive reduction in terms of labor issues on our sites. The issue that you've raised around food has been an isolated incident, and all the issues that were raised, we have remedied that in terms of how people are being looked after. It is very important that if we have our South African workers working, that we make sure they are fed properly. And what you've raised is an isolated incident of a few people that has now been remedied and has been dealt with. And it's very important that we have consistency on these stations, that everybody gets treated fairly, and therefore in terms of feeding, that they get the same food across. And we have invested significantly in making sure there's capability on site to be able to deliver that. It is a massive, massive operation on site. There was a question relating to the road repairs and the increase thereof, and then obviously the move to the shadow toll. We have in our price application that Eskom has put forward to the regulator indicated that the road repairs in Mpumalanga required is in excess of 10 billion rand to just repair the road. We have taken all of that out of our price application except for the first year thereof. And the first year is the 900 plus million rand that you raised. And that's really to start dealing with critical roads in Mpumalanga that needs to be repaired in order to ensure that we have security of supply to our power stations. Really, our expectation would be that now onwards, that SANRAL will take over that responsibility in building roads. Eskom is not a road building company. And therefore, the proper authorities need to do that. And for the use of the roads, certainly, we would have to make sure that there's payment thereof. And hence, that's the reference to the shadow tolling. So it's a significant increase, essentially to deal with the critical roads in Mpumalanga. And you would know that the roads are in a dire straits in that part of the country. The issues around coal quality, Chair, we will come back to that when we come back. But needless to say, majority of our coal problems comes from Duva and Mata due to poor quality. These are high ash contents. Our plants can't do full load. And on a daily basis, it can go up to over 1,000 megawatts. 1,000 megawatts can really power a lot of South African industry. What are we doing? We're engaging with the mining companies. We may have to renegotiate contracts and pay more for the coal, as well as invest in plants that will clean up the coal. And that is what we're currently busy doing. Chair, there was a comment around China and the importance of transmission lines and what is Eskom doing. I agree with you around the need for transmission lines. They're crucial in terms of ensuring that we get the power to different parts of the country. Eskom has got an extensive program of building over 4,000 kilometers of high voltage transmission lines. Our biggest problem currently is getting access to land and getting servitudes. We're building a line from Gauteng into the Western Cape. We're building lines into Medupi, the northern part of the country, and we're building lines into KwaZulu-Natal. The Eastern Cape we've dealt with extensively over the last few years. So there's an extensive program to deal with that. I can share with you that currently we will not build those lines in time because we can't get access to land. We have really a difficulty as far as that is concerned, and that will put the whole power system at risk. The progress in terms of the World Bank alone, certainly we have money for the concentrated solar plant, for the Majuba rail line to move the trucks off the road on the rail, as well as for the wind farm. We're working with the World Bank because as part of that process, we need to use their procedures in terms of procurement of those technologies. We would hope. Certainly we can do that, and we can show you exactly where in the country we're planning to build and where we have difficulties. Particularly for this part of the country, it is a particular concern because we cannot get to the Western Cape. So the wind farm, really our intent would be to start the procurement process this year. I've told my team to try and accelerate it and really get construction going next year. And we have started work doing feasibility work around the concentrated solar plant. Really look at with the bank at the different technologies. And the Majuba rail needs to start at the emergency. They're all funded. There's no reason why they cannot continue. I will touch on Kubek's performance. Kubek is not close to decommissioning. Westcom has run Kubek over 25 years now, safely. And it's one of the best power stations globally. Currently, if you look at the Chinese nuclear plant at Daya Bay and Kubek, they're performing better than the French plant in France. We are extremely proud of Kubek, and certainly and therefore Kubek has got its full life. We're doing some very interesting work now at looking at the extension of life of Kubek and making the necessary investments and debating that within Eskom as to what is possible. But I will also touch on that Africa to meet its climate change obligations, and particularly because of baseload capacity and because of water restraints in the country, nuclear certainly provides for the country the best option in meeting its baseload requirements going forward. And it's a matter of urgency that the country must deal with that. And at the same time, so must renewables play a role. And as Eskom, we certainly believe that we need to enable that to a greater extent than in the past. And so must independent power producers play a role.
Just a quick follow-up. I'm glad to hear that Quebec will be assured of longevity. I took it as a main person in that field. I thought that once this completed the lifespan of 40 years, then it was about to be decommissioned. I'm fascinated to hear that there is a possibility of prolonging its life.
Chairperson, yes, follow up on the whole issue of coal. Chairperson, you know, for me it is, Eskom deals with this low quality and quality and coal problem like a yo-yo. If there's no problems and everything is going smooth, you keep the yo-yo in your hands. And if something is going wrong, you throw the yo-yo down and push all the problems down on the coal problem. Now, earlier this year, Xstrata, Exxaro, and Anglo came to Parliament with Eskom, and at that meeting, the mine company said that there's no problem with the quality of coal. On the contrary, Eskom keep on saying there's a problem with the coal. Now, what I can't understand, what do you do about this? Because meeting after meeting, year after year, there's a quality coal problem. In South Africa, we sit with quality and quality reserves of coal. We've got this coal power stations, but at the end of the day, we suffered to get the quality coal from the ground to the boilers of the power stations. Certainly, there must be a problem somewhere because you pay for a certain product, and according to Eskom, you don't receive that product. So if you don't receive the product, why do you then pay for that low-quality product, as you mentioned? You must please explain to us, Chairperson, through you, how can we get to solve this problem at the end of the day? Because we have the coal in South Africa, and you've got the suppliers, you can get to an agreement to get the quality of coal. Why is it not happened? Thank you, Chair.
Yes, I've answered that question, but bear in mind that we have a board meeting dedicated to the early next month. As soon as we come back from the
say, you're correct, we will have a meeting. We have a problem with the coal. We have a problem with the quality of coal, and we have a problem with the volume of coal. We have a problem with the transport of coal. Those are the three things. All of that leads to higher electricity prices. The quality of the coal is supplied within our contracts. Some of the qualities are at the bottom end of our contractual levels. In some cases, mining companies gladly pay penalties for exceeding the qualities. Now, I can say to you, like I said to you, between 500 and 1,000 megawatts every day South Africa loses. And so our emissions are higher, our carbon footprint is higher, yet you're correct, we have the coal. We can get it right, we will have to pay a higher price for that. That higher price goes straight into the electricity tariffs. And those negotiations with the mining companies are currently ongoing, and they have been. In the case of the volume of the coal, some of the coal we cannot get access to those reserves. We cannot get it for a long time, and if we get it, we have to pay close to export parity prices. So it's a real problem. And it should not be a problem because the coal is in South Africa. And it's an issue that we have raised. I can say to you, we have raised it with the Department of Mineral Resources. We have raised it with our ministry. We have raised it in this house. We have certainly raised this. But it's an issue that we must deal with as South Africa. But we have not stopped negotiating with the mining companies on finding solutions in that regard. But it's a real problem. There was a question around making sure that we share transparency with trade union leaders in terms of how we deal with salaries and the company. I can say to you that we've started that process in a proactive manner. 2 weeks ago, we've taken them through the whole Eskom funding. We spent 4 or 5 hours. We even agreed to talk to them about how employees are paid, the remuneration structures, because you're right. It needs to be transparent. And they need to be well informed before we get into salary negotiations. I think, Chair, I take the comments around the FET colleges and the work we need to do in that regard, and we will certainly work quite hard to get that to get that right. Paul has dealt with the bad debt issues, and most of the World Bank and the Bulletin special pricing agreements. We will come back, Chair.
Do you think the second law for World Bank being considered?
Madam Chair, if you remember, at the time of the negotiations, there is a clean technology fund that the World Bank operates, in which if you are going to invest in clean technology, you may approach that particular fund. At this point where we sit, we are in no negotiations with the World Bank to access those funds.
Okay. Work done around Mpumalanga roads. What are we doing to remove the trucks from the roads? A lot of support that we've received from Transnet, particularly to our Majuba power station. We have a contract with them. We've worked together very well. And we've seen increased deliveries to Majuba Power Station through rail. And we've also worked with Transnet around a very innovative solution in building a railway line to Camden using containers. So we have a clear plan as to how we can migrate from trucks to roads, and I think we'll share that when we return as far as. Your question, Chair, around industries and our fleet strategy, it all has to do with long-term planning. South Africa needs to have a plan as to what energy it's going to build. Will it be nuclear? Will it be coal? If we build capacities for coal, building boilers in South Africa, and we don't build more coal stations, we don't need it. So we need to understand what the plan is. And then we need to understand what the Eskom must do. Then we can work with suppliers, like you said, and make sure that we create capacity in the country. We have done so. Today we can make over 60% of all the boilers that we build in Kudukin see that in South Africa, and that capacity has been created. But we need a long-term perspective as a country in terms of that. And then I think, Chair, we'll talk later when we come back about your question around the 3% growth. You're very right. That's our assumption over the long term. If the economy takes off, it may well be higher, and then we would require more than doubling of South Africa's electricity capacity. Chair, I think we have covered most, if not all, the questions.
On page 68. that we'll be given a chance to just come and expand in more detail in the dedicated presentation on exactly what the methodology is for rural electrification, how we enter into the agreement with the Department of Energy, and how we funding on their behalf. Because again, our growth for us to indicate that we're a mere instrument of implementation and not actually give you the benefit of how the model works and how we arrive at electrification. Also, there's a footnote there that says electrification within the licensed areas of supply of the municipality is carried out by that municipality. So there are other partners as well that participate in electrification programs besides just ESCOM. So I think we owe the House to give you a broader picture of what is involved there. Lastly, Chair, on page 176 is the under the consolidated financial statements section is a statement by an independent statement by the auditors where they pronounce on their level of comfort with the accuracy of the financial statements and so forth. They state there in the first paragraph on page 176 that they are expressing comfort, and then there's a whole set of notes starting on page 177. There's a number that I think has been confusing members, which is actually spelled out there. It is under going concern on page 177. It says there that the funding gap over the next 7 years, based on the plan formulated by ESCOM after the multi-year price determination tariff ruling, and as communicated in the public domain during April and May 2010, indicated that ESCOM is facing a cumulative cash shortfall of 115 billion by 2015 and 190 billion by 2017. So we don't have debt of 190 billion. It's a cumulative shortfall that will occur by 2017, all things held constant. So if you do nothing extraordinary, ESCOM will be 190 billion in the red by then. So all these conversations we're having about funding model, about all this, it's about how do we proactively ensure that we don't end up in red, as stated and validated by our auditors in 2017. So right now we don't have a debt of 190 billion. So those are some of the factual points, as I thought, Chairperson, in addition to what my colleague said, that you just pointed out.
It is a very critical intervention because I was also very uneasy with the debt factor. So thank you very much for reclassifying that. But also, I think we agree with the space for creating the space for issue of rural electrification. But before I take the three hands that I have noted, I forgot to congratulate Mr. Chris Pauly, who is now a father of twins. Congratulations. And in fact, often when we congratulate SOEs for doing well, we forget that there is normally a person or a group of people located in GPE who is a steward that is facilitating or that is part of the process that yields good results. And I think the accolades we gave to ESCOM are the accolades that we should also give to the DCG for Energy, Mr. Ford. And for myself, also on behalf of the committee and for myself personally, I have total confidence in your leadership. And congratulations, everybody. Thank you. Members, you had follow-up questions?
Chairperson, just very briefly, whilst you've gone to the your employees, what plans have you got in place regarding the wage gap? You haven't dealt with that. What are you doing to appease that and that terrible anger that's on the ground at the moment relating to that?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I didn't get an intended effort on the question that was messed up by Honorable Member Andale. Energy theft and vandalism definitely have got a negative impact on the growth path that you are embarking on. what partnership, what intention do you have to stop that, and with what partnerships?
Thanks, Chairperson. In fact,
yes, you forgotten.
No, in fact, it relates to the inavailability of land, as Brian alluded. I would recall, Chairperson, some time last year, Eskom did raise a difficulty with some owners of game farms that wouldn't allow or give them servitude on their land. Can I check if that's still the case? And unfortunately, as this committee, we should take responsibility because we had promised that we would handle the matter.
I noticed that Mr. Khorin has just left. I think we will bear with him. He just landed from an international flight, and I think it was very courageous for him to come and join the meeting. So I would presume that, as he said, he disappeared for that reason. If he comes back, we'll welcome him, but
I just need your guidance. It's nearly 1 o'clock, and we're just over halfway through the presentation, and we doing no follow-ups on the first half of the presentation. So can you just guide us how we're going to? Because I've some other questions of the still here for the presentation still to come. Are we going to move beyond 1 o'clock, or are we going to? I need your guidance how we proceed.
The slides that are outstanding, they are very short. We can be very economic in terms of engaging, in terms of the presentation and in terms of the questions. So we are not going to go beyond 1 o'clock. I actually have a meeting with some Transnet representatives at FNC 1 o'clock. So we must finish before 1 o'clock. But I want to say to Eskom, as we move to the other slides, I do accept that moving forward beyond beyond 2017, the burden should not be on the country problem, and we should not be loaded on your shoulders, or should burden you. But I think you have a leadership role to play, given where you stand today in South Africa's history. It is you that must quantify correctly, it's you that must edge that decisions should be taken, so that we don't have a repeat of what we went through as a country 10 years ago and all of this. So much as you want the, how much, 144, the difference to be removed from you, from your funding gap, because that's not your problem, it's a country problem. You have to do the calculations, the edging, and you will have to do that with us too, so that collectively we push the powers that be, the people that must take the decision to take this. So I really want you to still quantify correctly and to still edge together with us, those that must take the decision. We can proceed quickly through the two outstanding. This number, is it 5 and 6 and 7 or very briefly?
Chairman, let me go just through the operational performance very briefly in your presentations, and as well within the annual results that you have as well. So let's just look at some highlights. We split that down to the different businesses in Eskom. On our corporate services, really some issues to deal with there. The issues around climate change considerations in Eskom, and particularly how do we use coal more greener. We continue our investment in underground coal gasification, and we have now successfully coal-fired gas into one of our units at Majuba, which is quite a significant achievement. As far as safety is concerned, it remains a concern. It will remain my and my team's concern until such time that we have no fatalities in Eskom, and we will continue to work in that regard. We continue to be concerned around conductor theft, and we're working with the government as well as with other state-owned enterprises to combat that. fatalities in Eskom for the past year has reduced from six, in terms of employees, from six to two, similarly with contractors. But particularly public fatalities has increased around also our, particularly our accidents in terms of vehicle and coal trucking as well. Yes, sir. And therein lies the question around the partnerships in terms of electricity theft, because it is very dangerous, and you have seen us in the media quite aggressively addressing that as well. In looking at reducing the country's CO2 emissions, a base scenario, which is work that Eskom has done in terms of a low carbon future, if we do nothing, we'll see that our emissions will peak in terms of tons of CO2 by 2050, close to over 700 million tons of CO2. But if we have energy efficiency of our thermal fleet, the renewables introduction, and you'll see the biggest contribution will have to come from nuclear and in the future carbon capture and storage. And if we South Africa do all of that, then it can see a peaking of its emissions by about 2025. Carbon capture and storage technology not yet developed, but it's in experimentation mode, whereby you would capture the carbon coming out of coal stations and then store it deep underground in aquifers or oil wells. In the area of our human resources division, we remain at this and being voted as the top employee of choice, particularly under engineering graduates, and this year again we have continued to do that. Our training cost is 750 million rand that we spent in the last year, and as the chairman has said, we have over 5,000 learners that we have. We have to build our capacity in terms of our projects, and we have to ensure that the skills that we have across the business, that we make sure that we retain that skill. We have a concern around the safety of our staff. They work throughout the country. They are targeted on some areas in terms of when they work alone, they are shot at, and we are working with communities to make sure that we look after the safety of our staff as they work throughout the country. In terms of our generation performance, the work that we've done around the long-term coal strategy, we have a strategy. We've developed it. We have started negotiating it and put it in place. We share with you earlier that Kuberg has had 25 years of safe operation. We've added more capacity. We've made progress at Medupi and Kusile and Ngula. And in terms of independent power producers, we have now concluded contracts for over 376 megawatts that is signed of independent power producers. Some of them are actually operational. But the challenges remain. We've discussed extensively the coal challenges in terms of coal quality performance and volume. That also leads to higher particulate emissions on our power stations because the ash contents are very high. But we still have operational challenges, and that requires us to continue to focus on them, including our safety. I'm not going to go through the next slide. It gives some indication of the funding, as you have raised, Chair, in terms of what happens beyond Kusile, possibly, and how that will add both generating capacity, and well as at the bottom we indicate to you our approved capital plan, as well as the unapproved projects that you've discussed. On the customer network business, we've worked very well with our Southern African neighbors. We have delivered a successful World Cup. The electrification targets have been exceeded, and our transmission performance remains world class. And we continued with that, our significant expansion of our transmission networks throughout the country. But demand side management is also important. We have saved over 372 megawatts in demand side savings last year. And as Eskom, we started the acceleration of the solar water heating program in the country. The committee has raised the issue around theft. It also is, we are concerned. Obviously, as we see more pressure on customers, late payments for large and small users, and therefore the management of our bad debt remain important, as well as how do we make sure that as a country we look at the power conservation program that can assist over the next few years with regard to making sure that we do not have energy constraints going forward. Chair, on the next slide we give an indication of the supply chain, the value chain in Eskom, and the different KPIs that relate to that, our key care, that's our index in
terms of how we serve larger customers, over 100, as well as our customer service index for the rest of our customers, slightly lower at 85%. Our electricity consumed by sales, we supply 41% to the municipalities and 53% directly by Eskom, and it's broken down, the majority of that is industrial and mining customers. And the total of our electricity sales, residential customers represent 25% of our total sales, so most of it is in large businesses. But relates to only Eskom sales, and Eskom has got a very small number of residential customers, so most of it is within the 41%. But your question relates to what is Eskom South Africa's, never mind, South Africa's energy intensity. And if you measure it per capita, GDP output, your conclusion is correct, that we're woefully inefficient. I think when we come back, we can show you the comparisons of South Africa versus other countries, and therefore energy efficiency in South Africa remains the one response that we should do for energy security as well as reducing our carbon footprint as a country. It's something that we can do immediately.
And I think that's culture is the industry and not households. In terms of, yes, households are a little bit liable as well, but the biggest culprit of energy inefficient use is industry.
All of us will have to save, including households. We have seen industry taking on board voluntary energy saving initiatives, and some of our big customers have made significant strides in actually reducing their energy. Some of the mining companies have reduced it by over 10%. But across South Africa, households, particularly in the area of solar water heating, commercial customers, and large industry, there's a big opportunity for us. But South Africa, we believe, remains a low-cost producer of electricity. We should price it correctly. We've seen economic growth. We've seen underinvestment. We all know about this. And we've seen the fact that tariffs are certainly insufficient to build up reserves for us to reinvest in our capacity. So after our tariff increases, as Paul has said, an average 25%, we believe that certainly at the end of this period, that Eskom will remain a low-cost energy. Our contribution to society is extensive, over and above our footprint. We've had significant amount of beneficiaries. We've made grants of over 47 million rand towards economic and social development projects. We've made donations, giving our total grants 56 million rand for the last year. Our local spend in terms of our procurement is over 50%. So over 50% of our major build projects are sourced from South Africa. And with that, our investment and support for black economic empowerment, of that expenditure is close to 29%. And also our contractors have been contracting to invest in local industries in the country too. But very importantly, strategically, as Eskom, the priorities that we've been driving for this current financial year that we're in is essentially how do we as Eskom look at dealing with the funding challenges and looking at what South Africa requires in making sure we have got security of supply. And in that regard, that is the issue that occupies us. That is the issue we've been discussing. How do we balance the need for South African security supply with the funding requirements for Eskom? And that is the roof of the house and the 190 billion rand challenge that we described earlier that we need to work on. But this house has got five pillars to them for us in this year. The first pillar is the 2010 World Cup. It was a very important part of Eskom, a date with destiny, a date that we've met, and we have dealt with that pillar in terms of our priorities for this year. The second one is how do we as a company become lean and mean? How do we not just ask the customers to pay more, but how do we look at efficiencies within Eskom? And in that regard, we started a program that we call Back to Basics, just going look at the processes in Eskom and how do we do things a lot more efficiently, how do we standardize that, and together with that, do a comprehensive corporate review. Our head office is too big. We're too top heavy, and we're doing some very critical reviews as to how we should be structured and making sure that we have the right people and the right processes. And that program has started and has been rolled out throughout the company. Actually, there are currently roadshows throughout the country to educate staff. And with that, we'll see the implementation and use of computer systems to help us drive that. The third pillar relates to our response to and work with the Interministerial Committee. And we've done extensive work as far as that is concerned. And we've also engaged the regulator extensively in terms of the impact of the tariff on the company. The reputation of Eskom remains a priority for us, Chair, that we continue to work on. How do we as a company regain the confidence of the public out there? It's important for us, and we're adamant that we will continue to work on that as a company. And in that regard, we have, Chorse developed a comprehensive strategy in becoming a lot more transparent, a lot more accessible, and getting out there to the customers and making them the center of our business. But we have a business to run in our core business, and that is the business as usual strategy on the right-hand side. The questions that you've raised around how do we make sure the operational part becomes a lot better, improve our plant availability, deal with the coal issues. We're also looking at initiatives such as introducing biomass co-firing on our boilers. That will also reduce our carbon footprint if we can do that. We're looking at higher efficiencies of our plants, and that will also make sure that we become a lot more efficient, as well as the issues around bad debt management, the theft issue that you've raised. So all of that is contained in our initiatives around business as usual. And Chair, that is our priorities for this year. Those are our priorities for this year. We as an exco deal with that, and we give feedback to our board and our shareholder on a regular basis. I must add that as a company, and the Chairman Moshe will talk about that, that we've decided to do a full strategic review of Eskom. It is currently underway, and really that brings with it a lot of more excitement in terms of defining the Eskom that we all want, which is a world-class utility that it used to be, that all South Africans can be very proud of.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if we still respond to the two questions that members have asked on which income differential or whether we defer that for later. But
that is a South African problem that we want you to pay attention to. So suffice it to say for now, we want you to look into this problem. And to tell us, in, not today, perhaps, in what ways you are trying to address it. But can I also remind members that the Minister of GPE has commissioned a review on remuneration packages that would indirectly or directly impact on this question. But there is also a presidential review on SOEs, which I think is a component of also the issue of remuneration. And in fact, members, I've had the first meeting with the chairperson of the review committee, as we had instructed that we should invite them to sit with them and then plan for the next quarter. So maybe we will leave that as food for thought, considering that there are those problems also underway. And lastly, Brian, from the chair, I'll take, if I'll check if there are any members, I've noted that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I would like to say, Brian, when we went to Copenhagen as a country, we did unashamedly say that we have coal resources that we will use until 2050. So I do not discount Eskom irrespective of the fact that we will go nuclear. It will take many years to have a nuclear plant, to commission yield and produce the results that you depicted there that will assist us to reduce our carbon emissions. So for the fact that we said to the world in Copenhagen, I'm sure we will reassert the message in 2011 when we host the climate change conference. You are going to be a central pillar of energy production in South Africa, and that's going to be coal-based. That calls for coal engineering, clean technologies, etc., etc. So I'm very uncomfortable with letting you off the hook beyond 27, and hence I say you should be central to planning for beyond 2017, not 2017. Members, let me give you a number. World Hospital Van Island and Hololo and Gloria, in that order, please.
Chairperson, very precise and to the point. In your report, you talk about Eskom as a strategic water user. And then you also identify various deficiencies, such as unaccounted water losses, water leaks, aging plants, poor and cool and coal quality, etc. My question is, firstly, what do you do to address these deficiencies that you've identified on water usages? Because water is becoming a scarce commodity in South Africa, and you're a strategic water user. What are you doing to address these deficiencies? That's number one. Number two, on page 179, there are two amounts that you mentioned. One is, I think, wasteful expenditure of 47 million that you have to pay as a late payment to South African Revenue Services. You did, the action was, disciplinary action was taken, and it resulted in a dismissal. I just want to know what happened there. And then just the next paragraph, your conductor theft last year or this year under review was just less than 46 million. And it was up from 30 million in the previous year. We've already discussed it. But the tendency is going the wrong way. It should decrease, now it's going up. And you referred to a 2,580 incident. Your recovery rate is not good. It's only 6 million out of the 46 million. And they say you can rule me out of order, but on your regulatory and legal framework. Just on your regulatory framework, you talk about the shareholder, which is the oversight authority. But the next paragraph, you talk about the Minister of Energy as your policy authority. Just from your side, do you have a view on this? Is it working? Is it not working? Depending, there are reviews coming, two reviews from the President and the combined interministerial. I would just like your view from your side. Oversight authority, a policy authority, is all spelled out in the document, in the annual report, to get a sense for us as oversight committee, where do we need to link up with possible challenges.
Members, you must be willing and ready to stay here until half past one. I'm not going to release anybody until half past one. You can ask us many questions as you want, but nobody is going to leave before half past one. The next person is Mr. Nkuba.
Thank you, Chairperson. A very simple question, and on page 41, safety performance. And there you have causes of fatalities, you have electrical vehicle and other. I'm used to graphs where other usually is the smallest component. But here you see other is number two. It makes me worried. Shouldn't we know what this other is? No, that is on your presentation, not on the on the report. 41 of the presentation. Yeah.
Yes, Madam Chair. I only have two questions. And the one is just very simple. Is electricity or illegal connections question will be, if you have you have coal mines and you have the cost plus 3% coal mines, and you have Eskom pays for all the equipment in the coal mines. So does that coal mines have to fulfill the BEE standards of Eskom, or is it like just a blank check that Eskom gives them and say, well, you go and buy whatever you need, we'll pay for it. It doesn't matter if it is locally procured or internationally procured, or where it comes from, we will pay you whatever you ask. Because I will say this, that in South Africa, there are suppliers that can supply, but it gets procured overseas and it gets imported and it costs two to three times more. And Eskom just pays. And Eskom says, well, we are not involved in the procurement of those things, but they pay the bill. So I just wanted to know that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine actually is a quick clarity question. You know, it's very interesting to me that last year, actually, Eskom had about 8% reserve margin. And today, it's running somewhere around 16.something%. Would you attribute this increase due to the fact that maybe you got some money from the IMF? The reserve margin. How would you attribute this drastic increase from 8% to 16.7%?
Thank you, Chairperson. Could I just ask, in addition to what's already gone before me, of the 12 million rand spent on the World Cup tickets, how has this expenditure benefited Eskom from a business point of view? Now, I know that we do this because of business, and I think we'd just like some clarity on just how you have benefited from that as a business.
I have a last question. I noted from media reports that of the people that are coming on board as independent power producers, some of them are doing technical engineering concepts, hydraulic, where they draw the energy from. Yes. They use a lot of water. And one of the people who were prospecting for that, if it doesn't have anything to do with you, please tell me who these people are so that I go after them. They got prospects to do that kind of thing in the Northern Cape, which is one of the driest parts of a dry country called South Africa. So if that links to the issue of water, they are prospecting for energy production from under. So is it you, is it NASA, is it energy that has given them the right to? Because that is going to take a lot of water. But my other latest question is on solar energy. My little bit of research, and please help me if my findings are wrong, is that solar energy, you input quite a lot in terms of money and resources, and you yield very, very little. So I don't understand what is the hype about solar energy, if ever at the end of the day it's going to use very little energy and yet input a whole lot of resources. Please dispute my argument. So I'm not really excited, much as we are the most sunny country in the world and the Northern Cape is the most sunny part of South Africa. I think we are being taken for a ride like we were taken for a ride with the PBMR, possibly. With us doing a lot of work for other people who are sitting elsewhere in developed economies who will make use of us to fulfill their own agendas and their own economic agendas for the future. Over to you, Eskom.
Chairman, now. I'm going to leave the first question to the chair, and we'll deal with that. There was a question around the partnerships we're having or forming around energy theft. We are renewing our effort around building partnerships at community level, at local government level, and certainly provincial government and national government, to really find a way of communicating this to communities in terms of the impact around that. And our distribution division is about to launch a brand new product to really try and get to talk to people and explain this issue very clearly to them. There was a comment around the land for the game farms and access to transmission land. It's still a problem. It remains to be a problem, and the transmission networks in the country will not be built in time, and it's costing us a lot more money, because every time we cannot complete our projects, we have to get contractors to come back and redo work. So it is an issue that we have raised and that needs to be addressed. There was a question around Eskom as a strategic water use. You're correct. We're a big user of water in the country. On our own operations, we're investing significant amounts of money to ensure that all our power stations are zero liquid effluent sites, and that we capture everything, storm water, rainwater, and keep it on site and reprocess more water. We're also doing significant amount of work with the mines. Mine water is an issue in the country, and mine water must be addressed in terms of investing in plants to ensure that we can clean up the water and maybe reuse it in the power generation side. You know about our work in terms of dry cooling that is employed in Matumba and now Madupi and Kusile, and we will continue to build all future coal stations using dry cooling technology. But it is a target that we have, and I must say, yesterday, this financial year, our teams on the stations are beating their targets to try and reduce their water use. Paul will answer the question around the PFMA and the tax issue. The conductor theft has increased. In the past week, I have met with some of our government agencies that's now partnering with us very actively. The Hawks is now partnering with us very actively around conductor theft. We have great support from them, and we have formed a partnership between ourselves, Transnet, Telkom, to really get a handle on this. There is a dedicated team in Eskom that focuses on this, as well as then increasing our security on our sites, and moving in some cases from outsourced security to full-time Eskom security personnel on our key installations that we need to do. I would leave the chairman to answer the question around the policy and the shareholder. Under others, in our annual report, that's why I was turning to that on page 61 of our annual report, there's a detailed breakdown of the fatalities, the Eskom fatalities, as well as contractor fatalities. And certainly, vehicle accidents and electrical contacts from a public perspective certainly is a big area of concern. But we also have armed robbery, people being shot, and we also have falling objects and other incidents that you can detail on page 61 of our annual report. We are working around the classification of electricity theft as a criminal offence, and we have raised it with government and working with legislators to get that addressed. The reports that we've had in the newspapers this week around Eskom and some contracts relating to our procurement is factually incorrect. The contract that was referred to is not an Eskom contract. We have the Cross Plus mines that is operated by Billiton, Anglo, and Exxaro, and in the cases of those companies, they employ their procurement practices and processes. We certainly will make sure and are giving them guidelines as to how they procure, but really the operations of those mines and the procurement process are those employed by Billiton internationally, or Anglo for that matter, and then they are used in terms of making sure that they procure correctly. If there are any concerns, we would appreciate if companies can raise it, and we will certainly pick it up with the mines, but it's not for us to start interfering on the management of the mine, but where South Africa can benefit, we must make sure that we impart that onto to the mining companies. But the report said it was in the newspaper this week. It's wrong. There was a question around how did we improve the reserve margin. Had this got anything to do with the IMF? I think that was the question. The reserve margin that went up to 16%, essentially driven by the global financial crisis. And Paul has dealt with that. We've seen quite a drop in our sales. And we've also seen, obviously, the capacity that we have commissioned. And I must say to the committee, since we've started, and last year we've commissioned over 400 megawatts, new capacity, but since we started in 2004, Eskom has brought over 5,000 megawatts of new capacity that we brought online since 2005, beginning of 2005. And that target was achieved just after our financial year. So it's a combination of both the lower demand as well as the additional capacity that we've been able to put online. Chair, I think you will raise with us the Northern Cape issues. I'm not aware of it, and I've got no understanding. So maybe you could just give us a detail.
Sorry, Chairperson, I'll get the one before. That's okay. Just on the wasteful expenditure and the VAT issue, as the financial director, it's unacceptable. We messed up. We didn't pay the right amount of VAT for a number of months, and that was effectively the interest we had to pay on the VAT we should have paid, which we eventually ended up paying, and we managed to negotiate our way out of the penalties. And I think it comes back to what Brian was suggesting in the Back to Basics, is our systems and our processes at Eskom are, in my opinion, fairly archaic. We have overdone things, and we are going back and doing it all over again and making sure we have the right systems, the processes, and train our people up to do things properly.
Thank you, Chair. We're a very honest CFO, Chair. Chair, the matter around the regulatory framework in terms of whether we feel it's working to have a line ministry in the form of a shareholder ministry, Department of Public Enterprises, and a policy ministry. One of the things I would encourage the committee to do, if I may, Chairperson, I heard you earlier talking about a field study, is that it would be useful if, as and when the committee does international field work, to also benchmark us versus other utilities elsewhere in the world, because that's how we benchmark ourselves. So for instance, we are 10th in the world at the moment in terms of generation capacity. If you look at the top nine ahead of us, they operate more or less the way we do. I've just come from a 3-day, 2 weeks ago, study visit to Sweden. One of our directors on the board is the chief executive of Vattenfall in the last 8 years, Mr. Josefsson, is on our board. And I went through an inspection of their operations as well as met with the Department of Public Enterprises and found the situation to be more or less the same, that where you've got energy utilities globally owned by the state, they tend to report to a ministry that has oversight over the financial performance of the institution. And then you have an energy ministry that, because, for instance, in other markets, you find that, as for instance in Sweden, the state owns the transmission line and then owns the utility, Vattenfall, 100%. So the distribution is a competitive environment, so that is managed by the equivalent of our competition commission. But the reporting then, because of this dynamism, is exactly like we have. They're an SOE created in line with their stock exchange rules, and it reports to public enterprises. So I think it works well. It's a healthy check and balance to ensure that the policy ministry can look at the broader national issues in terms of policy. For instance, we now have an inkling
that when the RP2 comes, it will specify which energy requirements of the country will be met by Eskom and which energy requirements will be met by other players, because it's exactly the role that energy should play. I also listed a few other independent energy regulators, in other words, NERSA's counterparts, and found that actually we have a good, healthy system. We've got an independent regulator with a policy, because herein lies the problem. If we reported to the Ministry of Energy and NERSA also reported to the Ministry of Energy, you lose the independence of the regulator. So those are some of the issues that I'd encourage the committee, as you do oversight, your site visits, study tour visits, to also start benchmarking, and hopefully you will see the benefits that we see in terms of how the top 20 utilities are run, how they are governed, and how they are owned. So from where we sit, it's a good system. Then if I can close, Chair, from our side, in terms of the outlook. The Chief Executive already mentioned that Eskom, we're going through a major overhaul of the organization. And perhaps the matter of the reserve margin is another question we didn't answer. The reserve margin in this instance is not a financial margin, it's a technical margin. Global benchmarks are such that we feel comfortable when the reserve margin, energy margin, is 15%. In other words, the balance between what we have as installed capacity versus what gets supplied and what remains in the network. Because then you're able to mitigate against any crisis because you've got 15% of margin to pay or to operate with. So we'll continue to focus on that. In a perfect world, you want it even higher than 15%, because then everybody can sleep peacefully at night. Now, this is the reason earlier, I think it was Member Sonto who wanted to know why we keep on saying 2010-11 is going to be tough. It's because it's in relation to the reserve margin. Should the economy improve at a faster rate than it's doing now, recover from recession, we will go back to a situation where we have a tight reserve margin, because there's no new plant coming on stream next year. It's only from 2012 onwards that we expect the first unit to come on board, and then 2013 and 2014. So 2010-11 is very crucial from a demand side management point of view. We've been innovating and we've piloted with a very wonderful energy saving tool, which we'll not go into detail today with your permission, because of we still need to have it launched in the market. We want to lose our competitive edge before we launch it. But when it's launched and rolled out in households, it will go a very long way to helping us mitigate that situation. Then in terms of driving generation capacity, I've already, in taking you through that in a report, clarified the 190 billion. It's really that we are committed to securing the future economic development of South Africa. And we're looking at various models of how to ensure that we deliver custody. And at the same time, because the country, as I've said in this committee previously, depends on Eskom. There's no other Eskom that will deliver 12,300 megawatts between now and 2017. So we will do our best to make sure that we don't let the country down. When the RP comes out later, hopefully this month or soon, it will then spell out who is responsible for what beyond 2017. And as I've said before, it doesn't mean we're sitting on our hands not planning beyond 2017. We're simply saying, in terms of commitment, we're committing to projects up to 2017. We know what is required beyond 2017, but we don't have the finance and the wherewithal to commit to beyond 2017. I think the Chief Executive spoke at length around carbon footprint reduction and a new system that needs to emerge for carbon credits and reducing carbon emissions. In part of the strategic review that we engaged in, we're looking at a new focus on green energy in Eskom, and we'll be looking at the various models that we believe can work in South Africa and in Southern Africa. And when that takes off, the board is due to receive a revised business model from the new chief executive and the team. We gave him 100 days to settle in and to turn tables upside down, to move carpets, not literally, but in terms of what's underneath, and be comfortable that moving forward, he can put his head on the block and say, this is the ESCOM I wish to lead moving forward, and this is how I wish to lead. And so in October, at the end of October, we have a strategy board breakaway, and at that board breakaway, we will be receiving and signing off a new strategy. In there will be, among others, a Southern Africa strategy, because we've always been saying we need to have a strong regional strategy in terms of Southern Africa. Then there will be a green company strategy, whether it's a division, whether it's a department within ESCOM, there will be that in place. All in line with ensuring that we don't wait for December 2011, but we start now to look at what it is that ESCOM can do in terms of renewable energy in a sustainable way. The finance director spoke at length around our quest to improve productivity and efficiency, and the number that we've asked the executives to put their necks on the block on is annual average annual savings of about 2 billion a year over the next 3 years. And really, where we can even exceed that target, we're pushing to ensure that ESCOM continues to be prudent. The chief executive spoke about how he intends to trim down the head office to ensure that it's not top heavy anymore. And in there, there's also an opportunity for us to realign ESCOM to the provincial borders of the country in terms of its management structure. And that's also part of the new strategy that will emerge in October. We remain committed to what we're calling zero harm in terms of that last bullet point, where we want to build, moving forward, a company that does zero harm to the environment, zero harm to people. So safety and creating a safe environment for us moving forward is not so much just about having less accidents and fatalities, but really having a company that is less harmful, that commits zero harm to the environment and the communities in which we trade. The bullet point at the bottom of the previous slide indicates that we've had this interministerial working committee on energy led by the Minister of Public Enterprises. We've been contributing to a whole host of the task teams. And the matter of the funding model actually is part of a working group in the IMC, which has also concluded its work now. So the interministerial committee is now in the process of wrapping up its work, and I understand there's a whole cabinet process around that, and hopefully we'll soon, at the appropriate time, the department and the minister will come to the community and share the outcomes of that. And looking forward, really, we're excited about ESCOM. We really look forward to a future where, given all the challenges we face, global warming, the need to mitigate climate change, we'll build an ESCOM that is much more innovative, an ESCOM that is much more futuristic, and yet at the same time responding to the day-to-day realities of people of South Africa, majority of whom are poor, majority of whom live in rural environments. I think we can only continue to count on the support of the committee. The committee mentioned earlier the matter of electricity theft. The question has been asked robustly over and over around whether stealing electricity is a crime or not. We, as early as November last year, made recommendations to the appropriate ministry to propose, would propose changes to the Electricity Act to make sure that that reality is mitigated. And so, as has indicated, it will now be up to the lawmaking process to accelerate that, and the appropriate act is the Electricity Act. To the best of our knowledge, there's never been an amendment. said so in so many words, Chairperson, that we're battling to access money. So whenever anybody, any municipality, anybody doesn't pay their bills, we'll turn them off. And so we need you to please convey this in your constituency that if people don't pay their bills, we're going to switch them off. We need to recover the money. We need to ensure that we engender a culture of payment. And so, well, we've done it in two provinces already, and they believe it's fair. But really, we mean business. We need to recover those money. That is taxpayers' money that is out there.
So,
we will switch them off. So, on that note, Chairperson, we wish to once again express our gratitude that you and members of the committee invited us here to come and share what we're doing, and in this context, the results of the previous financial year. And we will certainly continue to move forward in the spirit that you indicated of cordiality and partnership and being as accessible as we should be to yourself in the spirit of making things work for our country. Thank you very much.
I told you that I've been to one country twice in the last 3 months, a very energy hungry country that holds in high esteem. And I was really proud to hear that you are helping that high esteem. You did the good work up, and you asked me to support my faith. You keep your faith with you, so that is your life lesson. Thank you very much. But let's talk for 1 minute about our issues now. As you know, we were planning to go to the America. But somewhere, somehow, I said to you, yes, China. No, no. Originally, it was the America, but then we said to China. China is still on the map. I discussed with Mr. Bapela because we were saying we might go to February. I told him that the chance of us going to February are good. Because political parties will not use agriculture to access to the office. So, I'm busy discussing with him that we should meet in November. I will keep you posted. This is, I mean, I will be very discussing with him. But you say that I'm presenting my so, I mean, I will be asking him. So, which means we will augment our progress. The oversight that was made, the provincial oversight, we will have to undertake the international. Yeah, I also believe when I said, yeah, no, he said that he doesn't know that we would be rejected the mission, but I said, no, you are doing again. I have to leave in a discussion for that. I think we can do it. But I give you a final report next week to the one you need. VPE is coming for the annual report, but Carter cannot come next week. They must send an apology as we are sitting here. They are going to the energy has caused them, the select committee, and to prevent them and repeat you like a public hearing. They are going to that kind of thing. So I just say you have my thing to them, it's okay, because we will still have anything. But members, I want to remind you that the issue of transfer defined benefits is very clear. And the 21 weeks that the earmark has locked up. And I have a list of who say that they fall outside the retirement benefit fund, but they are also affected by the 2% increase. So who sell the government product? But let's complete the defined benefit one, and then we will look into the other one. So we will be in consultation with you by tomorrow, in terms of or day after tomorrow, the special day commission. It's slightly better for you. And then members, I'm supposed to inform you that there will be a budget review recommendation.
We're connecting flashes, so why don't you make the image? So I read the meeting is not calling. I mean, you have a very bad experience.
I don't know, I don't necessarily, as a being a single mother, meeting in the evening would be very
good. But the other thing, Chairperson, is that, like Honorable Mukwena is saying, you know, some of us stay in areas where you have a flight once per quarter. So you miss one, you are in trouble. So Friday may just have those challenges, unless we try to start earlier. Unless you don't know what the 12-foot lock, maybe we could start. I don't know whether.
So if there is one person or two who must leave before 12, will excuse them. Yes, I'm telling my best. Because the only next week Friday is recess. We're playing into the period of recess.
Unfortunately, I'm in Kenya on the Commonwealth Day.
But the budget review recommendations report, there's training for members between 2 and 5 at the Buduk Chamber today. The economic cluster, yeah. It's here in Parliament at Buduk Chamber. Yeah. Buduk Chamber is at the.
Next to the president of the
Yeah, there's a training there, yeah.
You can go and.